Okay. Good evening, everyone. If I can have your attention. And we will bring the Monday, April 26th meeting of the City Council to order. Let the record show that all council members are present, although one is arriving right now. You're allowed. And we'll begin our meeting with a moment of silence. Thank you. I love that moment of silence. It's always so nice to start the meeting that way. Right off the bat, we're going to have our about-to-be sworn-in new police chief, Tim Olivas, lead us in the pledge, and then we will do the swearing-in.
If you'd stand and place your right hand over your
enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully.
And that I will well and faithfully.
Discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
Discharge the duties of which I am about to enter.
Congratulations. And we're going to have and we're going to have Tim's wife, Sue, come and put the badge on.
Be careful.
It's official.
Well, thank you. I would just like to say a few words, so if you'll bear with me. It is truly an honor and a privilege to be sworn in as the 7th Police Chief of Morro Bay Police Department. I'm proud to serve this community, and I'm proud of the department I will be leading. I look forward to working closely with community members, the council members, department heads, our other city leaders, allied law enforcement agencies, to continue providing the best possible services we can. I believe I recognize the importance of the chief position as a leader, but I also recognize that I can't do this job alone. The support from department members in the community has been wonderful. Thank you all for being here. I know the support is not a right, and it is something that I plan to continue to earn. I am very proud of our police department, and I'm confident that the more the community members learn about us, the more they will be impressed. I would sum up my leadership style as someone who will value the traditions of law enforcement, but is also willing to look at issues from different angles and different perspectives to make positive changes and to continue to move the agency forward and honor the law enforcement profession. We still have some bumpy roads ahead, but with continued teamwork approach and the support from the community, I am confident we will not only persevere, but we will learn from our challenges and be better off for having experienced them. I want to thank family, friends, and the community for being here tonight. You not only honor me with your presence, but you honor the entire Morro Bay Police Department. And for that, I am forever grateful. I want to thank a few people specifically. First, City Manager Andrea Luker, for having faith in me and giving me this opportunity to lead these wonderful men and women in this department. I want to thank retired Chief John DeRohan. He's out here in a Hawaiian shirt somewhere, over there in the corner, enjoying retired life, obviously, for giving me the opportunity to come here as the commander and mentoring me to this point in my career. I'm truly grateful. And I want to thank the members of the Morro Bay Police Department, my family, for your support. And I will look for that in the future, too. Thank you very much. I also want to thank allied agencies who are here, who honor us with their presence tonight, especially the chiefs and second-in-commands who have very busy schedules, willing to fit this in. Thanks to the member of my fish and game family for being here. I know some of you traveled great distances to make it here today. I'm forever grateful. A special thanks to a few certain people who I consider my true heroes. First is my mother and father, who I could credit for establishing my core values at an early age. I always like to tell people my parents never told me how to live my life. They just lived their life and let me watch them do it. Probably stretching it a little bit there. But I think you get the message. And also my aunt and uncle, who were like a second set of parents to me and surprised me and honored me with their presence flying all the way out from Indiana to share this experience today. And last but not least, my beautiful wife and my wonderful son, for sharing this experience and supporting me throughout my career. Truly, you know, unless you're a family in law enforcement, you don't really realize the sacrifices that families go through being law enforcement families. So thank you. Because I have to go to work.
But so, thank you all for coming.
Thank you again for coming. Thank you.
Okay, and as the crowd departs, yeah, I know. Okay, if you could please all move out to the lobby for your conversations. Thank you. I'd like to ask the council to pull items A1 and A2 for approvals. They are proclamations that we need to hand out tonight.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. All right. So Noah and the people that are here for the Arbor Day proclamation, would you please join us at the microphone?
Noah made the motion.
What are we doing? How long?
Okay, whoever's here for the Arbor Day proclamation, please come forward. I'm glad you didn't. Okay. This is a proclamation of the City of Morro Bay declaring April 30th as Arbor Day. Whereas, in 1872, J. Sterling Morton proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that a special day be set aside for the planting of trees, and this holiday, called Arbor Day, was first observed with the planting of more than 1 million trees in Nebraska, and Arbor Day is now observed throughout the nation and the world. Trees can reduce the erosion of our precious topsoil, cut heating and cooling costs, moderate the temperature, clean the air, produce oxygen, and provide habitat for wildlife. Trees are a renewable resource, and trees in our city increase property values, enhance the economic vitality of business areas, and beautify our community. Morro Bay has been recognized for the past 21 years as a Tree City USA by the National Arbor Day Foundation and desires to continue its tree planting ways. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Janice Peters, Mayor of the City of Morro Bay, do hereby proclaim April 30th to 2010 as Arbor Day in the City of Morro Bay, and I urge all citizens to support efforts to protect our trees and forests and encourage them to continue their planting ways. And I think, Wally, you've been the designated spokesperson here. Okay.
Thank you, Mayor. We appreciate this. We've been working hard, all of us, and you have a good council member here, you know that. I've been doing this for 15, 20 years, 50 years, in fact, all my life, and I love trees. They give a lot of oxygen, and they give out carbon dioxide. Do you want me to read this? She's read it. We want to thank you very much, Mrs. Mayor. We appreciate this very much. We've worked hard. As you know, we have a bunch of trees that are planted. They're all native, and these people have done it and planted it and everything. Good job. Thank you very much.
And I should say, this is the representative group of the Citizen Tree Committee. There's other members that couldn't make it tonight, but we are really appreciative of the proclamation. And actually just wanted to make sure Wally specifically was recognized, because he's been putting trees in the ground in our city for many years, and we really appreciate his work. So.
Saying I'm the oldest guy here.
Yeah. And many more, right, Wally?
Okay, and then may I have Kelsey Greer? There she is. Okay. And we also have another proclamation declaring May 2010 as Bike Month, and May 17th to the 21st is Bike to Work and School Week. Whereas bicycle commuting is an effective means to reduce air pollution and conserve energy and promotes the livability of communities by reducing traffic, noise, and congestion, Bike Month is a San Luis Obispo countywide celebration of human-powered transportation, which encourages people of all ages and abilities to ride bicycles to their destinations. And Bike Month promotions, such as Bike to Work and School Week, Commuter Bike Challenge, and Safe Routes to School, successfully encourage citizens to ride
to work and school and to your errands and around town is a great way to improve your health, reduce traffic congestion, help the air, and just make a better or a more sustainable community for everyone. This year, we've got over 60 events planned. They're all free for the community. They're happening all over the county. We've really worked hard to spread outside of our San Luis Obispo-centric area. So there's going to be a lot of events happening in the North County. We also have some rides leaving here from the Central Coast and as well as in San Luis Obispo. So we hope that we'll see you out there at some of our events. And one of our events that we're doing again this year is our fourth annual Commuter Bike Challenge. Some of you may remember it from last year. Essentially, we challenge organizations to compete against one another to see how many people they can get from their organization on a bike at least one time during Bike Month. So it's just riding a bike once, logging your trip online, and you're contributing to your organization's challenge. Organizations will be awarded at the end of the month for their efforts, as well as individuals for making the most miles, trips, and reducing the most emissions by riding their bike. Also happening this year, again, is our executive challenge. Many of you have the form in front of you along with your Bike Month flyer. The executive challenge is a special challenge. We reach out to our executives to lead by example and ride a bike on May 19th. It was formerly our Make the Grade, Make the Coast ride, and it's grown to be our executive challenge. There will be rides leaving from the North County, the North Coast, San Luis Obispo, and the South County, all ending in San Luis Obispo City for a celebratory bike breakfast. There will also be rides happening all over. If you can't make it to those, please just try and ride your bike during that day, and you'll be recognized in a Tribune ad for our community to see. Also, some other events that are happening. We've got free coffee for cyclists who ride during the third week, which is Bike to School and Work Week. We have bike and movies, bike education classes, bike kitchen events where you can come and fix up your old bike, that one that's rusting in your garage that we'll hope you'll drag out during this month. And our annual bike art gallery has moved to Atascadero this year. So on the back of this flyer, there's all the events are listed, and you can find out more information on our website, which is just rideshare.org. And as I said, I hope to see you all out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. Okay, and our featured business is Nick Martinez. Is Nick here? And he's going to tell us about Bottle Deli and Liquor. Oh, he's not here. He didn't come. Okay. Well, they were going to tell us about the wonderful new deli that they have at Bottle Deli and Liquor. So check it out. They got a whole bunch of good food there. And we'll maybe get him next time. All right, so council announcements. I just want to tell everybody we had a wonderful kite festival. Oh, wait, I have a letter that Peter sent me. This came into the chamber from, I don't know where these people are from. Anyway, letter that came in after the Kite Festival. We had a wonderful, wonderful day at the festivities. Our grandchildren had a great time. Oops, we did too. We enjoyed the parade and our visit to the Embarcadero. It was such a generous outpouring from the community. Loved the free kites for the kids and the generous way in which they were offered. Did they fly? Oh, yes. Great exposure to kite flying for children. What a super happening, except they ran out of hot dogs. We weren't the only ones having an outing beyond dreams. When we left, the air was still full of self-decorated kites and many happy faces. Thanks, Morro Bay, for a super weekend. You can't get a better thing than that as a response to our events. So I wanted to share that. And upcoming next on May 15th, which is Saturday, we have our third annual Mermaid and Pirate Parade. And at the request of the Tognazzinis, who always supply the sea snacks at the end of the walk, we are opening it up to sea creatures as well this year. So costumes can be mermaids, pirates, and sea creatures. Use your imagination. We're not going to have prizes for costumes. We're going to have a raffle drawing so that it's more fair for everybody. Everybody has the same chance. So that starts at 10 o'clock out at the Rock. The parade itself will go at 10:30 to dockside, and it includes sea snacks when you get there. So it's a lot of fun. We'll announce it again another time, but plan on getting the costumes together for the kids. It's a lot of fun. Parents can wear costumes, too. And I think that's it for my announcements. Betty? Rick?
Just a couple. As far as the 10-year plan to end homelessness goes, which I'm on that committee, we did hire an executive director, Pat Gomez, an attorney that's worked with the old EOC for years and been very active in homeless women's issues, domestic violence, things like this. So she is hired on and will start her job in June. And just a word about the parade. It was very enjoyable. The Kite Festival was well run, and kudos to the chamber staff and Peter and Sharon and the rest of them that were out there working it, did a really good job. Appreciate it.
Noah?
Thank you. I have a number.
I'm sorry, Noah. Just one more thing. I'm going to take a trip to Santa Paula Wednesday to look at PERC and get a tour.
We're going to be leaving from the wastewater treatment plant here in Morro Bay out on Atascadero Road at 9 a.m. this Wednesday, the 28th. I'm planning on getting down there for the tour at noon and wrapping it up, getting out of there before the rush hour traffic by 2 o'clock. So if anyone would like to get a little more detail about that carpool, feel free to call me at 772-7668. So that's that. I would like to put out a big thank you to all those that came out and participated in our first community workshop for the Downtown Enhancement Project. We had a really excitable group out that had a lot of energy and enthusiasm about our downtown area, and the facilitation was really great, and overall we actually had a fair number of agreements going on between the diverse crowd that was there, so that was really exciting to see. Our next workshop is this Wednesday, the 28th, in the evening at 6 o'clock at the community center. We're in the back room there by the kitchen. And what we're going to do is check in with some of the results and the feedback and input that we provided to the Cal Poly graduate class. They're going to present some of those ideas back to us. We're going to talk about those ideas and then get a little more specific about the concepts there and send them off with even more information about what we really want to see in our downtown in the future. So anyone's welcome to attend that workshop, again, this Wednesday, the 28th, 6 o'clock. Even if you didn't attend the first, we're going to be focusing in more on some of those ideas. And if you did attend the first, all the better. So I have flyers here if anyone would like to take one. And we do have a website which you can get to get more information about this project through the city's website. And if you do want to call me or any of the other subcommittee members, feel free to do so. We're getting a lot of good feedback about it. And the Cal Poly group and our own city staff is really helping to move this along. So it's exciting. And
jump in on that for a second before you finish, because I did participate, and it was a lot of fun. The amazing thing to me was there were how many groups? Seven
groups,
and each came up with their own ideas, and it was incredible how similar they all were. So we do have a sort of a united goal for this area. We just have to implement it. So
yeah, and that will be the challenge. The focus of this project is really checking in with the community about our vision and ideas about the best future for our downtown, looking at the historical visioning documents that the community has developed over the last 30 years, and then we get into the implementation phase, which will start after the June 7th presentation at the Planning Commission, and that's going to be something that our Planning Commission's kind of chomping at the bit to start to work on and plan the implementation and funding and potentially codifying some of the ideas that come out so we can make sure that we follow through with action, which is really an important component to it. So thanks again to everyone that's participating, and look forward to seeing you this Wednesday or further on down the road. Another couple of quickies. We have the candidates debate that is going to be happening May 4th here, 5 o'clock, thanks to the Community and Business Forum, the Chamber of Commerce, and Lions Club for helping to put that together. That's going to be the only candidates debate for the primary election, so that's currently planned. So it's really important for everyone to tune in, take a look at the candidates, get a good idea about who you'd like to support, and I'm actually impressed to see that every candidate has an active website, which is perhaps the first time in the city's history, kind of a sign of the times. So again, May 4th, and AGP will be broadcasting, so we can look forward to checking that out. Another couple quick items: the Medicinal Marijuana Dispensary Subcommittee. We had two meetings scheduled. Both of those conflicts have arisen with the scheduling for those next two subcommittee meetings, so they've been postponed. Everyone that's on the committee list has been notified, and we're going to work on a couple of additional dates to continue with the process there that the council's directed us to do. And then the last quickie, it's just kind of an interesting, fun one. National Geographic this month has focused on water. It's a special issue that is really interesting. Good perspectives from around the world, but actually one of the main articles focuses on the California situation with our water supply and the Sacramento Delta issue, and I just recommend everyone to take a look at this. Of course, it's available in the library, and I actually, I'm thrifty as hell, but I broke down and bought one, so take a look. It's an important issue for us, and there's some good perspective there, so that's it for me.
Okay, Carla.
I just am going to make it short. Reminder that we have positions available on our advisory boards, and we will be holding, nominations or selecting from those at our May meeting. So I would like to encourage anyone interested in serving on an advisory committee that's open to, I think at, right now it's C. Jamie at City Hall. Is that correct? For applications. Thank you.
Okay. And our staff announcements, we've got
up on off of Highway 41. If you remember, 2 years ago, we actually we're honored with being able to host that event here. May 13th is Law Enforcement Night down at Farmers Market in San Luis Obispo. And May 15th, National Peace Officers Memorial Day. That's a presidential order, and we ask that all businesses, residents, and government offices fly their flags at half mast. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And closed session report. Bob?
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, Councilman on closed session on two items. They discussed real property transaction, and they discussed personnel issues regarding the reorganization of the Public Service Department. As to both these items, no action was taken and requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Okay, thank you. Noah?
Yeah, I forgot to mention, we do have for the Arbor Day celebration this Friday, Mr. Woods and his staff have organized a tree planting event at Del Mar Park in commemoration of the new dog park there. We're going to be meeting at noon in the Northern Island Street parking lot and putting some trees in the ground, taking some pictures, and enjoying the afternoon. So anyone's welcome to come out to that as well.
All right. Now we'll move along to public comment. I just want to say something in advance. We are in a campaign mode, and we don't have a Sun Bulletin any longer. We don't have a Bay News being delivered to our door. So this is a way for candidates to state what's going on with their campaigns and for people to make their comments about that. Nothing derogatory, nothing against anybody else, okay? But other than that, we are happy to hear what you have to say. All right, we'll open public comment. Where are my
partners. Hi, my name is Claire Grantham. Really excited to be here. I'm a resident. I'm president of the Friends of the Police, and I'm joined by Elaine Giannini, Virginia Hiramatsu, and our most of our board, Dale and Dan Riddell, Lanny McKay, and Doug Riddell. We're missing Jack Barrett and Barbara Riddell. But we want to be the first to congratulate our new police chief and welcome him. And we have a little doodad for your desk that we want to present to you. Virginia will bring it over to you across the pen. And we are just really looking forward to hopefully being able to work with you and do what we can to support the police department. So congratulations, Tim. We're really happy, all of us.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and council members. My name is Kathy Novak. Noah, you kind of stole my thunder. I was going to announce the candidates debate that's going on a week from tomorrow night, Tuesday, May 4th. He'll be here at the Vets Hall. AGP Video is taping it, so if you can't come to the candidates forum, you can catch it on TV later. It's going to be moderated by Stu McElhaney. The forum will start, actually we're going to have a meet and greet starting at 5 o'clock, so we have the candidates coming down here, so if you'd like to come early and have a chance to talk to them, but the actual forum starts at 5:30. We'll start with the mayor questions first, and then we'll follow, have a short break, and then we'll follow up with the council questions. So with that, hope everybody can come a week from tomorrow night, May 4th. Thanks.
Thank you.
That went really quick. Good evening, Mayor, City Council, and City staff. My name is Deanna Kennedy, and I'm a candidate for City Council. First of all, I do have a little something I want to read, but I want to commend the city staff. Anytime I picked up the phone, and you know who you are, you've been so helpful, and I really appreciate it, and I know that you've treated the other candidates the same. And they actually, especially when I met with Dylan, I told him, okay, now talk down to my level, because he knows so much. And he explained everything to me so well, and I actually understood it. And Bruce, when he walked me through the wastewater plant, he did an excellent job, and he explained everything to me thoroughly. So I just want to take this opportunity to thank all of you. And next, I know that the budget is on everyone's mind, and I would like to take the time just a minute to read a little statement. Even with the city budget, there are important priorities that traditionally compete with each other for proper funding. Public safety, education, public health, and other areas are joined by transportation for budget requests to carry out their mission. In any city where resources are limited, service means completing projects on time and within the budget whenever possible. The fire department, the police department, and all first responders are committed to safety, and we thank you, and service as part of their mission. With moral-based challenges of dwindling funds, resources must be leveraged to provide
a week, and everybody's kind of excited about that. And it seems like we're going to have a little over 500 cars, which is still down, but still very good. We apologize to anybody that's going to be inconvenienced, but most of the merchants are going to be. I went around last week, and I had to try to find 6 motel rooms. It was very difficult. But only 2 motels have stepped up to the plate as far as the car show goes. Days Inn is a sponsor, and Estero Inn is a great sponsor for us. So we applaud those people who, are, again, have their businesses full, and that's what's the idea of it. And we also would like to know that, or let you know that the car show has always been a non-political venue, and we are hoping that it remains that way. I spoke to one candidate for assembly who has his car entered, and when I asked him not to do that, he was not pleased. But again, this is about the car show. It's about the businesses. It's not about the political forum. Second, last Monday I received a call from the planning department about, I had feather flags that said for sale in front of my business. and said that I'm going to have to take them down because it was against an ordinance. I complied reluctantly, but looking at the ordinance itself, there are some loopholes there, what I would call a loophole, but it's really in the ordinance that I really could fly those flags. But we will comply with that. Hopefully, the city will also comply with that. At the corner of Market and Pacific is a huge 6-foot or 7-foot sign that's got real estate for sale. So I have to take mine down. You don't. The second is political signs, all on city property. Sign ordinance says I have to take mine down. Why don't you comply with that and take all of the signs, which is probably about 60 to 70% are going to be on city property. I know we all have to advertise, but it's difficult. And may I say with tongue in cheek, what a heck of a time to bring this up. We are in one of the worst economy than anybody has seen in probably 30 to 40 years. And now we're going to stop people from trying to advertise. It's pretty tough, folks. And I know it's a long way to go. This economy is not going to turn around in 6 months. I know we have some challenges. The A-frames, we understand what has taken place with that. But people are trying to advertise for the business. They're not trying to outsmart themselves. Very challenging and difficult. So I hope you all take a pretty good look at that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
He's taller than I am. Good evening, Mayor and Council and staff and our vast audience out there. I know that because I've seen it played over and over all week. I'm running for city council. I'm Nancy Johnson, by the way, and I'm running for city council because I really, truly care about Morro Bay. Not only am I conscientious, accountable, responsible, and sensible, but in there comes the E, and that's experienced. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that this evening, maybe almost a lesson in Government 101. Having served on city boards and commissions for 10 years, I have a good understanding of the structure of our municipal government and the responsibilities of those who serve. The City Council appoints a professional city manager who serves as the council's chief advisor, and the city manager appoints the employees of this city. The city manager is the CEO of our city and is in charge of the day-to-day operations of our city. When the City Council makes a decision on an ordinance, a law, a policy, the City Manager is responsible for implementing these policies. The City Manager coordinates the operation of all the city departments and is responsible for the preparation of a proposed balanced budget and its presentation to the City Council. The annual budget, as adopted by Council, provides funding, staffing, and general guidance to the city departments for the fiscal year. For a city government to function effectively, it is vital that each of our council members and mayor understand and respect their roles. When you appoint a city manager, hire a city manager, the job then is to let the city manager do his or her job and hold that person accountable for their work. The next thing I want to do just quickly is thank our city staff who put up the plaque on Chuck's.
Have asked me to step forward and represent them tonight to ask you to make sure that when you look at the Community Promotions Board, that you recognize the important job and the important work that they're doing in conjunction with the TBID, the Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, and that you recognize that the job they do now in conjunction with the TBID, who promotes hotels, and the Community Promotions, who has historically promoted hotels, but is now pulling that funds to kind of more promote the retail segments and the restaurants, which are a huge economic impact to our community in the forms of jobs, businesses, and then the thing that, you know, fuels you and keeps the city funding, taxes. So please, I ask you now, do not cut the funding to the community promotions. Keep them at the current level that they're at, especially over this next year while they reform and restructure and get themselves guided into the direction where they can be strongest. I also ask that you especially not cut their funding this year, because the funding is already being cut by one-third to tourism this year coming up by the reduction of the TBIT funds down to 2%. So please keep in mind that when you're regarding tourism tonight, tourism funds in this city will already be cut from one board by one-third starting June. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Bill Yates. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm running for mayor. And I'm going to stay on attitude tonight, kind of following up on Ken Vestafelt. I'm hearing, since I jumped back into this thing, story after story. Some of it's been said in front of you, and I can tell from an eye glance that everybody knows what's going on. Everybody knows the stories. I'll just run through. Today, there was two. Ken's is one. Here's a guy, we all know he's in financial trouble. He needs to sell those things. He's putting these vertical banners up, and the city's hassling him. The city should not be hassling him. This is not business friendly at all. We do have a resolution on the books that says we're a business friendly city, and some of these things I see are definitely not business friendly. We have another man on Morro Bay Boulevard who tried to get a $40 permit to put some booths out. He got hassled by the fire department, and they're standing. That's not business friendly. You all know the DeGaramore story. That's really not business friendly. That I just, I've got two opponents up there. I would love to come one day and, say good for you for standing up and saying, we're not going to put up with this anymore. You need to set a policy to the city manager that we're a business-friendly city and we're a tourist-friendly city, and it should go without saying that we're a citizen-friendly city, that we make things easy for people to get done here, make permitting easy, get a we-can-get-it-done attitude instead of a no attitude. So that's my beef. It's 7 months, whether I win or lose, it's 7 months till the next council is sworn in. That's a long time. That, something needs to happen. Some change needs to be made. And I would hope that somebody up there is running out of patience enough to, to slap the table and say, let's get this changed. Let's get this in a different direction. I'm going to leave, so I'm going to have a quick comment on the pink slips. I agree with, was that Donna? I don't know. This is the city manager's job. This should not be in front of you. You should not be having a public hearing on it. She should be taking the action she needs to take, informing you by memo, and that's that. Shouldn't be here. Should not be in front of you. And I question why. Of course, I question why a lot of stuff's in front of you. Anyway, thank you. I hope my comments aren't reflective on all the city organization. 95% of them are fabulous. We need a few just to change their attitude, change their outlook. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Ani Lin. I live, work, and play in Morro Bay. Good evening to you all. I hadn't really planned about coming up here, but after watching the last council session and then just hearing the few comments, I just want to say maybe there's a compromise. I know the importance of not having tall, waving, flagging signs all the time. We don't want that always in our town. But maybe we do need to maybe put a clause in during certain times of economy, and as long as they're not thrashed and as long as they're pretty, it can be done. I agree also with what was stated at the council at the last meeting regarding the A-frame signs in the backs of trucks miles away from the business. Put it closer to the business.
We have time. Anybody want to pull anything?
I'd like to pull A, 3, and 4. I emailed for some answers, and unfortunately I have not been able to hear them, so maybe I could hear those responses now.
Okay. Can I hear a motion approving, unless anybody wants to pull A5, can I have a motion approving A5?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right, Betty, A3.
A3 is a status report on the water usage for March of 2010.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. Betty, I did get your questions. I got them about 4:30 when I got out of the meeting today. I sent that response to you, but I'll happily, if you want, I can run through those and run through my response as well. First question was in regards to Morro and Choro and our use of Morro and Choro groundwater. During the last month of March, we used water from both Morro and Choro without treatment. So we took water from both Morro and Choro and blended it with the product water from the brackish process to fill our tanks. So we did use both of those sources, as was indicated in the staff report. So point of clarification. But not all the Morro water received treatment through the brackish system. We actually used the brackish system to pull the nitrates down, and then that lets us balance and blend with our other sources. So it's a constantly shifting dynamic that we kind of run through and balance. And the second question was in regards to how does this compare with previous months. This was more than in the month of February. We had a very wet February. Our usage in February was one of the lowest on records. But this is 25% lower than last year. So this year during March, we used 25% less than we did last year. And that has to do with conservation measures in effect, and then also has to do with just the weather pattern. It's been a wet year, so that helps us on water usage. The third question was, why didn't we use any state water in the month of March? We didn't use state water in the month of March because at the beginning of the year, we started with a very low delivery percentage of 5%. So what we did strategically was we knew we would be running our brackish system. And so what we tried to do was delay using state water as long as we could to allow us to maximize our local sources. And then once we make that jump, we've backed off of our brackish system and we're running on state water. So it was an intentional move on our part to try to maximize our sources and the timing of those sources. And then you had another question in regards to what deliveries we'll receive for the rest of the year. Deliveries have increased to 20% on the state water project. And so because of that, it's an interesting phenomenon. With our drought buffer, we have right to receive, we're protected down to 33%. This year, the county has unused allocation, and so that unused allocation becomes available. As we get up in the higher percentages, so let's say in the 40 or the 50%, that allocation starts to get eaten into pretty rapidly. But because of our situation this year, we'll actually get more water at 20% than we normally would at a higher delivery percentage. It's just kind of weird how the math worked out with the county's unused allocation. So for all of the remainder of this year, we'll receive more water than we would have under a normal delivery year, with the exception of November and December. November, we have the shutdown traditionally, and then December, we just don't need all of our allocation. So we'll be receiving very near and beyond 100% for almost all of the months remaining in this year, with the exception of November and December. And then finally, the question was in regards to flow rates in Choro Creek. We measured flow rates directly at two times, and then we correlate those known flow rates with a staff gauge that the county maintains. And so it's our belief and understanding that at all times during the month of March, flow rates did exceed the 1.4, which authorizes us then to extract from that resource. So that's the response I had to your questions.
Thank you. I'd move approval of...
Oh, yeah, just one follow-up request, Mr. Wade. And as we progress here and you produce these reports, which are really helpful, if you could, within the state water component, highlight any update that you have on the state water maintenance period or period there, so we know kind of tentatively those dates. And
will do. I usually get it's usually September, October before they tell us, so they don't give us a lot of warning, probably about a month in advance, but I certainly will include that when I get it.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, one more question. From the residents, complaints about the taste of the water, the new ammonia is in effect or not in effect, or when it is in effect, it'll change the flavor?
Yeah, as we get more complaints, so when you switch from chlorine to chloramines, you have a period where your taste gets a little off, I guess is probably the best way to put it. Sometimes your water tastes a little bit flat. So you'll notice that, and we get a lot of complaints when we make those changes. There are some people, too, a lot of people will notice when we're on a chlorine, we get a lot more taste and odor complaints about a chlorine taste or a chlorine odor. That's not a bad thing. We want chlorine in the water because it keeps the water safe as it gets to you, but we do get more complaints. So in regards to that, we should be, we're back on a chloramine, which is our normal operating scenario.
Opposed? None. Okay, Betty, A4.
A4 was with regarding to amending the municipal code and parking, and I actually is satisfied, and I forgot to check it off my little list.
Oh, okay.
So I have no comment and would move approval of A4 unless someone else does.
No, I'm sorry. It's not a public comment. Sorry. Okay, we're going to go to break in just a minute. You can ask a question then, okay? Do I hear a second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right, we'll take a short break, and we will start our public hearings. Okay, if I can get my council back up here, we'll get back to work, please. Okay, we're back. We're back. All right, we're going to start with our public hearing items. And the first one, item B1, is consideration of replacing the Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride service with a flex fixed route service. Try and say that 5 times fast.
Or even once.
Okay, we got Janine going to present on that one. Okay, can we have quiet out there, please? Thank you.
Thank you and good evening. Tonight you have before you an item to consider replacing the Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride service with a flex fixed route service. As the city begins the budget development process for next fiscal year, it must look at what transit funding will be available from the state to determine what kind of or what level of services that can be provided for the Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride, and whether or not it can be funded at the existing levels or, if at all, beyond this current fiscal year. Just as a little recap and reminder for the council and for the members of the public who are watching and who are out there, the city receives from the state Transportation Development Act, or TDA, funds with which to operate transit programs. It's made up of two different funding sources, local transportation funds, or LTF, and state transit assistance funds, or STA. One set of these funds comes from or is derived from sales tax generation. So as the economy has been down and people aren't spending as much money, not as much sales tax has been generated in the past. And what that means is there's a smaller pool with which to dole out to all the cities and the counties within the state. Currently, the city uses all of its TDA funds to fund the dial-a-ride service. No TDA funds are used for the trolley service. So with that, the only funding that's available for the dial-a-ride service is the transit funding we receive from the state. Dial-a-ride type services are the most expensive type of transit services, as they have fixed costs that are associated with it that are not associated with other types of transit services, such as a fixed route. So what staff had done was to evaluate different types of transit service options, including looking at how far back could or can the city cut back on dial-a-ride in order to keep a dial-a-ride type service available. Some options were looked at and presented to the council at your March 22nd meeting. At that time, the council did not take action for next fiscal year and directed staff to come back after another evaluation of some additional transit service options that focused more or as much as possible on a dial-a-ride type situation, and to come back in this month with that evaluation. In addition, there was mention of the Cambria Community Bus that was also to be looked at and get some information on to see if that is something that could possibly work for the city. Staff evaluated additional options, brought those to the Public Works Advisory Board for consideration for implementation in July 1, and they're here in your staff report on pages 3 through 5. There are essentially three that are being looked at. The first is to reduce the dial-a-ride service hours and restrict it to one vehicle only. The second is to establish a year-round fixed route service. And the third is to establish a community volunteer bus service like the one up in Cambria. With regard to reduction of Morro Bay dial-a-ride service hours and restricting it to one vehicle, on page 3 of your staff report, it lists the different parameters with which such an option would be operated. Only one dial-a-ride vehicle would be in operation from Monday through Friday. It would only be able to provide 5 hours of service per day, with advance reservations to be taken for about 2 hours the day prior to when service is desired. And the estimated fare box ratio is 6.6%, which is below the state mandated 10% requirement in order to continue receiving certain transit funding. So with this option, while you would be able to be within the funding available that's anticipated to be received from the state for next fiscal year, the fare box ratio would fall well below the 10% that's required by the state. So this option is not viable and is not being recommended by the staff.
Could I ask you to just clarify that whole ratio thing? Because I know it's a confusing concept. And could you just explain how that's
fare box ratio is a calculation of the fares that are generated to your operating costs. So if you have $30,000 of fares, you would divide that by your total operating costs, and you get a percentage, and that's what's called the fare box ratio. The second option that was looked at is establishing a year-round fixed route service. And this was actually taking an idea that was originally rejected in what we were looking at last time and tweaking it a little bit so that it could fit within the funding that would be received from the state. And basically what this is it's kind of a blending of a fixed route system and a dial-a-ride type system. It has the basic framework of a fixed route service that goes around in a loop with its various stopping points, but it has the ability to flex off or deviate off the route to make a pickup for someone who has made an advance reservation and then gets back on the route and goes around. So while it's not as much dial-a-ride type service as is provided currently, it is It's believed to be able to alleviate some of the concerns that the council had last month with those individuals who might fall through the cracks, the seniors or disabled individuals who might not be able to become ADA certified to use the runabout system. On page 3 of your staff report, this option lists the different parameters under which it would operate. One vehicle would be in operation, and we would be using a smaller dial-a-ride sized vehicle so that we could go into some more of the residential area than what was proposed last month. The service would be Monday through Friday. The fixed route portion would be for general public, so all members of the public could use the fixed route portion. The flex trips, or what we're calling the call-a-ride flex trip, where the person would call ahead to schedule a ride off the fixed route, would be available just to senior and disabled individuals only. Runabout would be the federally required ADA complementary paratransit system that is available. And in addition to that, there's also Ride-On has a senior shuttle that's available Mondays and Wednesdays in the North Coast area, and that can be utilized by Albertsons. So those were the number three destinations for the existing ridership. So if you look on Exhibit B of the staff report, you see what we've also done in the north end is we've kind of bumped up into the residential area and gone up through Greenwood. There's a senior complex that's on Elena just past Spencer's Market that we would have a stop in that location because we do pick up a lot of seniors in that residential area. And then cut over on Greenwood coming back down to head north. And then going along the beach tract on the west side, which in the past has had dial-a-ride service but hasn't had any fixed route type of service even when the summer trolley's going. So what this would do is run along the beach tract and then pop back out onto the highway at San Jacinto. The other thing with the route, what's being done is going along Piney Way so that some people in the easter portion of the south end of the community could have easier access to the fixed route than if it's just running along Main Street itself. While the flex fixed route service provides for less dial-a-ride type service than is currently provided, as I mentioned before, it does provide some limited dial-a-ride service to seniors and disabled individuals that the council was concerned about maybe not being able to qualify for the ADA certification to use runabout. With this option, there is anticipated to be no funding shortage for the amount of funds that we would be receiving from the state once you take into account fares for the budget. In addition, the fare box ratio is estimated to be 13.6%, so it's above the 10% required by the state, so we wouldn't have to worry about any potential withholding of funding if we did not meet that. This option is being recommended by staff for implementation July 1, and the Public Works Advisory Board also, at their meeting last week, considered the items that you have before you and is in agreement with staff's recommendation and recommends this option as well. The other option under consideration is establishing a community volunteer bus similar to the one that operates currently up in Cambria. As I mentioned before, at your March 22nd meeting, one of the council members brought up the community bus that they had seen up in Cambria and wanted to get some more information to see if this might be something that would be workable for the community. And on pages 4 and 5 of your staff report, it outlines how the program works. Essentially, what it is an all-volunteer program with the exception of a half-time dispatcher. The county provides a vehicle service per hour fee that funds approximately $25,000 per year. And it doesn't fund the whole operating budget, but it funds a good portion of it. The service is run by the Cambria Community Council. They're a nonprofit organization, so the service is not run by the county itself. And the county's only function is to provide some funding for the program. The service runs, they've expanded, and it now runs 5 days a week from, I think, 9 to 5. And with one day a week, it makes trips out to San Luis Obispo. The community council is responsible for getting all the volunteers, organizing their schedule, is responsible for insurance, for promotion of it, for checking the driver's licenses and driving status of the volunteers. Basically, the whole operation of the system is under the responsibility of this outside agency. They also operate passenger vans that hold no more than 9 individuals so that you would not need to get special licensing, a Class B license. And so that kind of expands the ability for the driver pool if you just need to have your regular Class C license. The concept of a community volunteer community-based service is appealing as it's structured like in Cambria, because it's a way of being able to provide some specialized dial-a-ride type service at a much reduced rate because it's almost virtually 100% volunteer. As I mentioned, the only paid position is a half-time dispatcher who dispatches for a couple of hours a day for the next day, and this individual also does the driver trip sheet for the next day and the monthly driver schedule for the following month. And what happens is if there's no volunteers available for a shift, then the vehicle just doesn't operate at that time. The service would be a good complement to the proposed changes that staff is recommending, changing the dial-a-ride from a dial-a-ride service to a flex fixed-route service, as it could provide some additional opportunities for senior and disabled individuals in addition to the flex trips that are available, the ride-on senior shuttle, and then those who are certified and can use the runabout paratransit service. However, the difficult part is, since the city is not is making a recommendation, although not for tonight's meeting, because this is something that will be coming to you under your budget hearings, but staff is making a request or submitting a request for $15,000 of Measure Q funding to fund the pilot community bus project for next fiscal year. If this concept is shown to be sustainable for the long term, the funding for beyond next fiscal year, we would be looking to the transit funding that we receive from the state in order to cover that. One last item I just want to update everyone on is the Transit Efficiencies Group. The council's been getting updates periodically. The mayor and city staff have been participating in this Council of Governments Transit Efficiencies process to examine possible efficiencies for operating transit services in the North Coast area, Los Osos, Morro Bay, Cayucas area. And during the last year, there was not a lot of progress that was made on it. The Council of Governments was moving into a new building. The Regional Transit Service was taking their services in-house and moving into a new facility. And so it was kind of not a lot of activity going on towards the end of last year. The beginning of this year, that has picked up. We've had some meetings. There is a concept that has been identified that is in a draft form right now that needs some further refining and analysis before we bring this to the council for consideration, and I'm hoping to have that within the next month or so. Meanwhile, the timing for this is such that it's not going to be ready and would not be able to start July 1, and with the funding situation from the state, some type of action for the dial-a-ride needs to occur for next fiscal year starting July 1. With that, given due to the recession and the changes in the state budget regarding transit funding and the loss of more than $171,000 in the last 2 years from TDA, as well as the anticipated shortfall for next fiscal year of over $143,000, staff is recommending that the council consider the transit options for July 1 that are before you in your staff report, and conduct a public hearing on those. And once you bring it back after discussion, staff is recommending that the City Council replace the Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride with a flex fixed route service that is outlined in the staff report and on Exhibits A and B. With that, I'll turn it over to the Council for any questions or comments.
Okay, before we go to questions, I just want to say thank you, because last meeting we asked you to pull a rabbit out of the hat, And you pretty much did. And I really appreciate the effort that you put into this. It's a lot of work. The other thing that I wanted to mention, because I've had some people call me and say, well, why don't you just raise the fares? Won't that cover the problem? And I just want to reiterate, the fares, the estimated income from the fares is $38,000, and the shortfall is $137,000. There's no way we could raise the fares enough to keep the operation as it is now. So just to clarify that for people. Yes, questions, Rick.
And I'll echo what Janice said, because, I mean, I was afraid we were going to have to just chuck the whole thing, and it's reassuring to see at least we can help some folks out here. The concept that you looked at in Cambria, though, is restricted to just seniors and disabled.
Correct.
So I think we need to say that. We also... Now, on the fare box ratio, is there an incentive for us? We anticipate it going up from, I understand it has to be above 10 for funding, but if we take it up to 13, is there any incentives for bringing that fare box ratio up?
No. Okay. It's just you have to meet the minimum of 10%, so anything above that.
All right. And we talked about ADA, and on page 4, second paragraph, it's a long sentence, but while the Flex Fixed Route service provides for less dial-a-ride service than is currently provided, it does provide limited dial-a-ride service for those senior or disabled individuals who might not be eligible to become ADA certified to use runabout paratransit service, and would address the council's concern to provide those individuals with some dial-a-ride service until they become ADA certified. So people are probably wondering what they have to do to be ADA certified. I understand you have some applications at Dial-A-Ride, a limited amount, but you can go on the RTD website, and I think we click on what runabout, and you can download application from them, and then you fill out the application, and then you go to your doctor, and you get supporting documentation saying what your disability is to allow you to become ADA certified.
Correct. It's basically federal criteria for how to or for what is considered to be ADA qualified.
Okay.
And it's the RTA, Regional right. Transportation Authority.
Yeah, thanks. And I guess that process takes about 4 to 6 weeks, so people need to get on that now if they want to be eligible for the next budget run. And I think that's the only one.
Yes, it's that kind of that very, and
yeah.
I do need to go back into the GIS system and plot out the three-quarter of a mile versus the half mile. But that very corner part of, like, Kern Avenue next to the golf course might, I don't know if it's just outside the half mile or the three-quarter mile.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions, Betty?
Yes, I have a few. I think I sent a few to you, so I hope you're prepared. You had mentioned at the PWAB meeting that there was some unexpected money that came in. Is that the $15,000 you mentioned in this report, or is it another set of money?
No, that funding was for this fiscal year, with the governor passing the two bills that related to transit, the state transit assistance funding. One of the provisions in there was to disperse $400 million to the state for this fiscal year and next fiscal year. So what the Council of Governments did, I think in their April meeting earlier this month, they allocated some of that funding in this fiscal year to those agencies who were seeing that second cut in LTF from last month that would have to make cuts to service in this fiscal year, or have to raise rates in this fiscal year to deal with that. So that's the unexpected transit funding I was talking about.
So it's limited to this fiscal year?
Correct.
The number of vehicles that we currently own, the Dial-A-Ride, where you want to only use one, but we actually have three?
We currently have three vehicles, two of which are used during peak hours and one that's as a backup. So with what's being proposed by staff for the flex route and one vehicle being used, we would only need to have one as a backup, so the third one could be surplus and sold.
And then when you're comparing the rates on page 3, first under the reduced service hours, I assume that's under the current rates that we charge. And when you went to the fixed route, that was with the reduced rate? This is per person?
The reduction in Dial-A-Ride service hours option was looking at the current fare structure.
Which is
it's $1.50 per ride for regular and $1 for discount. And the fare structure for the flex fixed route service, fixed routes generally have a lower fare mm-hmm. because the operating costs are lower. And so what's being proposed as a fare structure on the fixed route side is the $1.25 for the regular and 60 cents for the discount would be lower than the current rate structure right now. It's consistent with the other fixed routes that are provided in the county. And then the caller ride or the flex trip off that route would be a specialized rate, and that would be double the regular fixed route rate.
Which would be $2.50.
Which would be $2.50
per
ride.
And so it makes me curious why you would not try to do the what we have now at a $2.50 rate if you think people will pay $2.50 in the future.
Well, after you had emailed the questions earlier today, I went through the scenario, okay, if we were to raise the fares for the dial-a-ride scenario to $2.50 per ride, what you would see after you've calculated a certain number of ridership loss because of the fare increase, that your fare box ratio would go down. Because while you would see some increase in the amount of revenue, you would also be losing passengers, so it's almost a wash at that point because of the rate.
And that's a theoretical program that you use to figure that?
It's you use kind of an industry standard of for every percent, I think it's for every 10% increase to your fares, you lose about 4% of your ridership. So it was kind of using that with the existing ridership we had and kind of doing rough calculations. So it is an estimate.
And then the way you figure the $2.50 amount for the new flex fixed route, how did that come to be?
It is double the fixed route regular rate, and that's what is allowable by ADA law.
Okay, just because that's the max you can do.
Correct.
Okay. And then what is the fee for the runabout and for the ride-on?
Runabout, since that is the ADA paratransit service to the fixed routes, it is for a Morro Bay trip to a Morro Bay trip, it is double the fixed route regular fare, so that's $2.50 per ride. And the ride-on shuttle, for the days it's in operation in the North Coast area, I believe it's $3 per trip. And if you were to call on the other days that it's not in the North Coast area, you would pay, I think, somewhere around $20 if you were to take that trip.
To include students and not just disabled and elderly on the flex part of the trip, that would be a council decision?
That would be a council decision. Staff was interpreting the discussion from last month as the senior and disabled individual issue higher need for local transit than the city. We've been providing the dial-a-ride service locally. So there's just a question of whether enough volunteers might come forward for such a service. What the intention was is to, because we'd have the flex route, if the council adopts those changes tonight, because we do have ride-on senior shuttle service capability 2 days a week, there's roundabout, there's also Route 12 that comes through the community. What the idea was that to start with a small 4-hour-a-day, 5-day-a-week program like Cambria did at the very beginning to see if there's enough volunteers that could be generated that could continue and carry on the program long-term, and if enough funding, the additional funding that would be required for the operations could be garnered from the outside organization that would be operating. So what the $15,000 that's being recommended, the idea is for a 5-day-a-week, 4-hour-a-day service for senior and disabled individuals.
So is that paying operating costs if you're using volunteers? Is it paying for a part-time person or what?
There are operating costs, even though it's majority volunteers. The operating costs come from the half-time dispatcher paid position. You have fuel and maintenance and repairs that are also part of that, the insurance, promotion. You have telephones for the vehicles so that they can communicate back and forth with the office, as well as, I think I already mentioned, promotion. So that's pretty much it.
Driver's license checks.
Right. There's also the DMV checks for the licensing and to make sure that an individual is in good driving standing.
And you don't see the same dispatcher for both services, nor do you see us letting them use the dial-a-ride vehicles?
Well, there was a thought that has come into my head, but we haven't done a lot of investigation on it. If the council goes with the recommended flex fixed route, we would have a spare vehicle that we would be surplusing and selling, and the thought would be that we would look into doing a vehicle trade-in for a smaller-sized vehicle that would fit that 9-passenger requirement so as to not trigger the higher level of driver certification, and then work out some arrangement, whether through a lease or through a sale, to whatever outside organization that would be running the bus program to get that vehicle. And so that would be one more step that would be we could help to try to facilitate.
Okay. And my last question is, there's a flexibility in terms of picking up people. Is there a flexibility in where you drop them off as well?
Yes, it would go both ways. What you would do, it's like scheduling your regular dial-a-ride. You would indicate where it is that you're wanting to be picked up, along the route, and then you can either get off it along the route, or if you have to flex off to your destination, the same thing would happen on the other end, and then the return trip would follow.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I've got three questions. One is mostly a process question. Obviously, we're going to be adopting some sort of change because of the budget situation, and I was just wondering if you had thought about how the evaluation process would transpire over the next year or so as we move into this transition, and what you see being our opportunity to evaluate the success or need for further adjustments as we go forward.
Well, I mean, obviously the main criteria is looking at your fare box ratio, if we're meeting that or not, but that's, you know, a year into the service. Since we'd be transitioning to something completely different, we would want to have more frequent evaluations, looking at it almost on a month-to-month basis for the first few months to determine, are there little tweaks to the program that we need to make? Do we have the routing kind of right? Do we need to make some modifications to that? So we would be looking at it on a much more frequent basis than we currently do with the existing dial-a-ride.
Do you see that being more focused through the Public Works Advisory Board for the public comment component, or is that something that would be coming back to the council?
We can certainly take it to the Public Works Advisory Board. They can receive comments from the public. Public can also call the Public Services Office and talk to me directly. They can contact Susan Brown with the Transit Office and speak with her, and we're in constant communication on a daily basis. So if there's something that's, you know, if something's not quite right from the get-go, we'd be able to identify that pretty quickly. So we would ask that the members of the public, if something's not working quite right, if they don't understand how the new system works, just give us a call and let us know.
Okay. That does lead into my second question, which is mostly about the coordination. There's a lot of opportunities and with
to be able to hand out to them to aid with that transition and having that information more readily available to them other than the options that they have right now. But I would say if somebody's doesn't quite know how this would work once it started, is trying to figure out if I want to go from this route to this location to this location, what are my best choices, I would say call the transit office.
Okay, great. Just wanted to confirm that. And then my last question would be if we do go forward with a flexed fixed route option, would it be possible to expand it to include students as a second level priority after seniors and this disabled, so that option's there, but it's understood that the seniors are and disabled are the first priority for that service, for the flex service? Do you think that's something that we could do if we feel it's appropriate?
If the council wants to include that and have that as a tiering process, you could. The operational nature of that would be that if somebody called, was a student scheduling a ride, and then later a senior or disabled individual called for that spot, the question would be, are you saying, okay, we now bump them and have to call that student back to say, you've now been bumped and we won't be able to pick you up at this time. So that's something that the council would need to make a determination on.
Carla, any questions? Can you tell me what the capacity is on the small dial-a-ride bus?
They are 16 ambulatory and 2 wheelchair capacity. So when the wheelchairs are being utilized, then the ambulatory goes down to 14.
And that's the small one?
That's the small vehicle.
And do we still have another dial-a-ride on the way besides the 3 we already have? Is that my understanding?
It's a replacement vehicle for for the 2007 vehicle, I believe.
So then, in essence, we would be surplusing 2 if we were keeping the new one and then 1?
Depending on the timing of when the vehicle should be arriving within the next month, so that vehicle that vehicle will be traded in as part of reducing the cost for the new vehicle. So that vehicle will already be gone, so we will still have 3 vehicles.
Okay. On the flexed fixed route, or all these, this is based on the current service company we have right now, the prices?
Correct.
On the flexed fixed route rates you gave, they're not the same as what's on Exhibit B, so I'm a little confused, because on Exhibit B, when you talk about buying the day pass, you have the fee at $4.
Right, actually, $2. Yeah, I apologize. I didn't mention that for the pass information, there's currently a day pass for the summer trolley program, but we don't have a day pass for the dial-a-ride program. We just have a punch pass. Other fixed routes within the county offer a day pass for their fixed route services, so we felt that it was appropriate to offer a day pass for the flex route. And then continue with the punch passes. And the rates for those, for the punch passes, as you see, you get 11 rides, but it's based on the cost for 10 rides. So if you have for the flex route, the regular 11-ride punch pass is $12.50, and that's the cost of 10 individual rides, and that follows for the others. The day pass was based roughly on an idea of 3 trips. So if you took 3 trips, that would be something like $3.75, and then you just rounded that up to 4. And then the discount is half of that.
So then if I had a discount flex route punch pass, it would cost me less than 50 cents a ride? Is that kind of what it averages out? So we're just 54 cents a ride. Okay. And I'm sorry, so the price right now is $1.50. I didn't write it down. $1.50 and $1?
And $1.
Thank you.
Okay, this is a public hearing, and I'm going to let this lady in the front row speak first because she's been waiting very patiently. So you can come up to the microphone and speak.
I'm just here to...
We need your name first, please. Could we have your name first?
Nancy Mason.
Thank you.
I live on Main Street in Morro Bay, and... I wanted to say that I believe the dial-a-ride, as I've experienced it, has been the most beautiful thing. And it's totally, that's my opinion, but I've heard everyone say the same. And because I'm a senior, that's a saving grace for me, because I don't have a car anymore. And this is just my 30 years. Change is fine, but I just want to know that it will be here for us. And I'm glad I had the opportunity to share that with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your patience, Nancy.
Thank you.
The name is Barry Brannon from Morro Bay. Concept of the city being in the bus business is a very interesting concept. When I understand last year the budget was $380,000, is that right? $380,000 is $30,000 a month. My question is, it seems like an obvious place for outsourcing. The this was put up for so we wouldn't have to own the buses. There's a lot of people that need work. I think we could have an entrepreneur that could probably provide equal or better service and well within our budget. And I didn't hear that looked at in the staff review, and I wonder if that's something that should be looked at. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Barbara Doerr, resident of Redondo Beach, but soon to be back in Morro Bay. We've been following this issue. I certainly support Nancy and her efforts to, you know, to keep the Dial-A-Ride. It's a fantastic program, and it's a shame it has to be lost, but I'm sure everybody understands your budget. I will have to commend staff with coming up with the fixed flex route that they've come up with. It certainly, when I was reading it, it accommodates those seniors and disabled, and it, you know, I'd hope it would go that three-quarter mile into the community, and I would hope you would add students, because it seems like it's few that are the younger group that need that direct ride with, you know, some protection from the world. And I did have three questions in reading the report. The dollar amount, the annual cost for the flex fix route, and the other was the anticipated, you know, dollar amount that you used for your feasibilities, and what are we going to receive in state funds, transportation funds, or these TDA funds that you've anticipated to, again, work in your feasibilities for the flex fixed route plan? I don't know if you have those answers tonight or...
Well, if she has them, we'll say after the public comment period
closes.
Thank
you very much.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? All right, we'll bring it back to council. Janine, do you have a response there? Oh, I'm sorry. You got to move faster than that, Nancy. You know that.
I got to be speedy. I just had a couple of procedural questions about the report. You were talking about accessing a website on the computer. Is there any kind of help for disabled folks who don't have access to a computer or don't know how to get to a website? Another thing, those of us who deliver Meals on Wheels are covered by an insurance that's through a group, and I wasn't prepared for this, but I think it's RSVP, and that's a volunteer organization. I know that Lenny Erickson is very aware of how this works because she's in charge of the volunteers for the Meals on Wheels program. But they just send you a little form, and you fill it out, and they cover your liability insurance. The other thing, I was really disappointed in the report that I didn't hear anything about looking at a new vendor or trying to find another vendor for this project where we might save some money in that way. So thank you. Those are my comments.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Pauline Stansberry, Morro Bay, president of the Morro Bay Seniors. And I got a call from one of the council members asking that I speak. My idea being, I do probably have a resource for volunteers to help that do not want to help in the office or do the library work or handle money. There's probably a lot of the guys that would be able to drive. A lot of them already are driving for the food giveaway. And as she said about Lenny, the Meals on Wheels. So I'd like to be my name out there to maybe volunteer somebody. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Anybody else? All right. We'll bring it back. Now, Janine, did you have a response for that one question?
I think one of the questions was what was the cost for the flex fixed route, and what we're estimating at is about $255,000. The transportation, the TDA funds that we are anticipated to receive is in the neighborhood of $204,000. And the STA portion of that...
percent to the 13. How does, again, is that formula that you're using that makes it look like that?
Something along those lines. And I don't have that specific information, so I can't say that that's the exact estimate. Mm-hmm. What I can do, if the council's interested, I can go back to the office and provide that at a later date, but I don't have that with me.
And if the state doesn't come through with the money, is that a make or break it for this system, for this program?
If there are additional funding cuts from the state, then we would be looking at having to make some reductions to service or changing the fares.
And I think Ms. Borchardt asked about whether this was based on the current provider, and that was a yes. But I know that we're in negotiations for our new contract, and the new costs aren't tallied into this.
Well, it's estimated based on a combination of what we're currently paying, but with the, if you're taking out the dispatching function, which would no longer be, there's an estimated cost for that. And this is getting into the next item on your agenda, but the program that's being recommended and to be starting July 1 would be with the existing contractor through a contract extension with additional direction to go through a bid process starting in the middle of next fiscal year. So I would defer the rest of that discussion to the next item, but that is the intent.
But they're linked.
They are linked, yes.
Okay. It looks like we have three things to consider here. First being the just simply reducing the hours and restricting it to one vehicle. Is anyone looking with favor on that one?
Can I ask another question,
sure,
please?
Thank you.
Ms. Burlingame, based on the comment you just made on the prospective cost at $255,000, I'm wondering why, with the reduced level of service, removing the dispatcher and all those things and running the smaller DAR, why right now at $380,000 divided by two, that's $190,000 each. So why is it going to cost us $65,000 more for a reduced level of service to run that one bus?
We still have the city's cost allocation overhead that gets added into the transit portion for operations. So you have the contractor costs, you have fuel, you have maintenance, you have utilities and promotions, but then there's also the citywide overhead that's added on top of that, and that doesn't change.
Okay. Well, it answered your question, though, right? Okay. All right. So does anyone favor the restricted hours in the one vehicle? That one is not recommended by staff. Is anyone looking at that as a...
Well, in light of Ms. Borchardt's comments or questions, it's like, can we really not have the level of service or close to it now without that? I mean, seriously, if we got rid of the overhead allocation, are we covered?
I don't know if the administrative services director wants to address the cost allocation plan portion of it. But.
Good evening, Mayor Peters and council members. The cost allocation plan is fixed, and it's something that covers, I guess at the time that it was put together, it was set up to cover the costs of having people involved in the process of Dial-A-Ride. I don't know what's going to change there, if there's going to still be accounts payable checks that are issued every month, payroll checks.
There's also the maintenance. There's portion of my time, a portion of council's budget, facilities, because we do provide a building. So those are all costs that are within the citywide overhead, that even though you're reducing the number of hours of service, those activities from the city end are not changing.
Well, there could be some reduction that we don't know about. I mean, maintenance, you're going to have fewer vehicles to maintain, you're going to buy less fuel, so there probably will be some reductions in that. We just don't know how much yet, right? Is that reasonable?
That's a true statement.
Okay.
I think there'd be some reduction. It's the cost of doing business, and I think you run the risk of going down a slippery slope when we start changing cost allocation for things like accounts payable and that sort of thing. Certainly a reduction if you're only maintaining one bus versus three, but in terms of some of the things that are done through the different departments like administrative services, those would remain fairly static.
Are they billed accordingly then based on the hours? So if there's a reduction in the requirement of facilitating one bus instead of two, the less fuel and this and that, these aren't fixed costs, are they?
Well, let Susan go into a little more depth, but the cost allocation is something that we
costs associated with that don't change. And so the little amount that you might save here and there, it's kind of hard to quantify right now. It may not be a big deal.
And it's something
that we'd have to look at.
If I also may add in, when you're talking about going from three vehicles to one, it's really three vehicles to two, because we do have that backup vehicle, and there are federal and state requirements regarding the 45-day inspections and 45-day inspections that still would have to occur even if that vehicle were not going into more frequent service like it is now. So as Ms. Slayton said, you might look at it from the maintenance end, but there might not be enough cost savings generated there to provide enough cost savings in this option to bump that fare box ratio up to the 10%.
Can I ask just one last question? Then the $380,000 that we're paying right now approximately is including that cost, right?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I'll ask the question again. Does any of us think that the one vehicle option is where we want to go? No. Okay. Then we're looking at the flex fixed route. I love saying that. So I was thinking about what you said, Noah, about students being able to use it too. And what if there's a two-hour scheduling time? What if the last 15 minutes of that scheduling time would be open for students to schedule? And that way you'll already know what you've got for the next day, and it still gives them the opportunity to use the service if they want to.
So you're talking door-to-door service for five students that we're going to make an exception for? I just feel like...
No, it opens it up if they need it. And so at 15 minutes before you're cutting off your dispatch, if the buses, if there's still time, there's still availability of some flex routes, and, maybe one day a mom has to go to a doctor appointment, and so the kid needs the ride, they may not every day. At least it gives it the option and availability. That's all.
Could I ask a question of Susan?
Sure.
Who's in charge of...
Oh, that's Susan, yes. Susan Brown, okay.
In terms of calling in, are a lot of your... I know you have a regular clientele, I believe, but then you have people that just call at the last... How much ahead of time do you usually know, and how much are like within the last hour or two before they really want to go somewhere?
Most of our riders right now call within half an hour. We ask them to call within 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm seeing this as a big adjustment that they have to call 24 hours in advance within a two-hour time period. That seems fairly restrictive. Do you have calls that probably won't be able to be met because of that 24-hour advance?
Well, most of the people that call and need an immediate ride are at the grocery store. One of the things we're taking care of with the flex route is going into the parking lot of the grocery store, right to the front door. So there's going to be a lot of rides that they won't need to call anymore. So it's going to be a lot more convenient, actually. It'll go by their house, on the street, and go right into the store parking lot. They won't have to walk out to the street with their bags. So we expect less calls for rides. There'll be less availability, whereas now we can do about 10 rides. We could probably do more, but we're doing about 10 rides per hour with the two buses. It'll be down to about 2 to 3 rides available. But those are just people who really cannot make it to their house. And we expect it to be reduced. But what was your question was about how many people ask about from the day before?
My concern is the anticipation that to have to know in 24 hours in advance within a two-hour time period that you're going to have to be somewhere. So for things that just happen daily in people's lives, there's not going to be an option.
Well, one of the things we've done for quite a while is encourage people, if they have an appointment at the doctor or if they have a mobility device, to please call the day before because they need a particular time. And that particular time is important to them. Even call a week in advance. That's what we've done now. So we're offering if you call a day in advance, you can get your particular time. And I think they're kind of used to that already if they have somewhere to be. Mm-hmm. So we've tried to always encourage that. It's just that people know that they can call this availability is there if they call, but they also know we might say the time's booked.
Mm-hmm. And then how full, you were just saying that you have about 10 people per hour, and if the if we're going to have one bus that carries 14, possible 14 to 16 people, is it anticipated that the buses will be full every hour, or will there be empty spaces, or... I think you went to, I think I saw
a schedule that that was presented by Ms. Burlingame that I think that could facilitate most of them that are in that area. I just think that, that we're not in a position to offer elite service at this point. And right now, at $380,000, what we're paying, and even going to $255,000 with one bus, which I'm still going to have some issues about, and we're spending $30,000 a month, as one of the speakers stated, that's $12,500 a week for 5 days. I mean, that we can't afford to keep going down this path. Yeah, I'm sorry to say, but going door to door and picking up people who have other options, I think, is just not something we have the luxury of affording right now.
So you're saying you don't even want to do the flex route?
No, I'm fine with some of the aspects of the flex route, not with the cost right now.
Oh, okay. All right. Noah?
Ms. Winholz, did you?
Well, I'm confused. I thought that this cost would be completely covered by the state and fare boxes. So I guess I wasn't looking at that. And is
$204,000 we're going to get, and it's $255,000 to run it, so we still have to come up with the other $51,000.
Well, I was hearing that was through the fare box. Am I wrong?
No.
Well, it was $204,000 of LTF. The STA hasn't been apportioned yet. In the past, we've received about $15,000 to $19,000, and then the additional comes from the fares.
So you're anticipating no cost from the general fund?
Correct.
Okay. Does that make it any better?
No, and I'm not really supportive of a reduction of what we're charging right now. I can see that we're not raising anything, but I don't want to reduce it, certainly. I'm open to what suggestions you have. I'm overwhelmed at the rate for one. I'm still stuck on the
$255,000. Noah?
Yeah, and I think we all hear you, and realize that we're coming into a different time where we have to transition, and I think this is a good step, the flex-fix route. I'm thankful that staff and our contractor and our Public Works Advisory Board were able to come up with something that still offers a really important service to the community. It's more limited, but I think it's just kind of the sign of the times, and I'm hopeful that we can continue at this level, but I think you're probably right. We should be prepared to see further cuts from the state, and I think that's one of the reasons why I'm really interested in this pilot study and the community bus concept, because to me that becomes a fallback option that will ensure, if it's working well, will ensure a dial ride option for those in the community that really depend and need it. So I'm excited and interested in the pilot program. With the students, I think that would be a nice option for them for the flex component, but I don't think it's absolutely necessary, especially as we look at how the different routes, or the what route has been oriented. We get a direct stop in front of the high school, one very close to Del Mar Elementary. So overall, I think we're covering that there. And again, if we have a good ability to review this and see how it's working and receive feedback, I'm confident that we can make adjustments if there's really important issues that we need to address as we go forward with this transition. So I'm not wed to making sure that the students are given that flex option at this point, because I think they're most likely able to find other options to get to where they need to go, and also, of course, using the fixed route elements of this. So that works for me as it is. I'd like to see staff take a further look at the difference between a half mile and a three-quarter mile
flex to see if there really is a better coverage opportunity, make sure we're not omitting any really important components of our current ridership that depend on this service and would be not able to use it in the half mile option. Let's see here. Just want to make sure that we've got everything covered. I'm really happy to see the seniors, Senior Incorporated and the Senior Center say that they're interested in being a part of this. It's really an essential component for the pilot study and the community bus concept. I'm curious to know what or whom would be coordinating the establishment of this in the beginning. I'm assuming that would be you, Ms. Burlingame, but at the beginning, who's going to be the driver and helping get this established?
I think that probably I would be the primary for that. There would be issues relating to an agreement with the city, so at some point the city attorney would be brought in, but I think for the most part it would be the Public Services Department.
To go forward with the pilot program. And on that note, I think those are all my comments.
Okay. We'll go back to the pilot program after we get the fixed route decided, I think, because that is a separate issue. Okay, Rick?
Just one thing. If we did adopt a community bus volunteer concept, how does that affect the state funding?
For the pilot project, there would be no impact to the transit funding. If the program is shown to be sustainable for the long term, for the fiscal year to follow that, your options are either general funds or transit funds. And as there are no general funds available without taking from another activity or program or service, the more logical choice is the transit fund, since this is a type of program that is eligible under it. The county uses actually some of their LTF money for the program. But I'm hopeful that we will be seeing some recovery in the economy. From my understanding from the Council of Governments, when they were making their decisions, when they were allocating the LTF portion earlier this month, was that the kind of the worst of it was somewhere around October, November, and that as far as for the drops. And they were projecting starting to see a leveling off and starting to see a small increase after that point. So I'm hopeful that with the following fiscal year, the amount of LTF might be raised a little bit enough to where there's not as much of an issue or a concern with having to look at the flex route and seeing if we have to make adjustments to it in the budget or in the fares.
Comment?
My only comment is I think giving our funding, the flex routes our best option.
Betty?
I would really like to see that two-window call-in period expanded to at least 3 hours. I think that's real limited. Somebody forgets, oh, they've missed for a whole 24-hour period. It just seems real narrow to me. And I assume that's just because of staffing and the cost. But or is there a way that they can leave messages or some way expand that? I think that's just real limited.
That would be a question for MV. The only reason that it was structured this way was that it would not require an additional body for dispatching, which would add operating cost and therefore put it over the amount of funding that we have available. So in addition to all the other project manager duties for the fare counting, the deposits, the training, the safety, the road supervision, I would look to MV to see if that window were expanded to 3 hours. Is that something that could be done by the project manager and still get all the other duties that she is required to do within the day?
How much cut in personnel is this going to be for the contractor?
That is a question for MV. There would be some changes as far as scheduling for drivers. I don't know what type of shifts, whether they're having to do split shifts, what the driving situation is. for that end of it. So it's really a question for MV and what kind of impact to their staffing levels that would have.
Can I ask Susan if she has an idea?
Yes, absolutely. We need you at the mic.
Is that the boss?
Yeah, this is Dave Nave, and he's here to speak for MV, too. Right now, there's six of us, and I'm going to lose a dispatcher, a full-time dispatcher, and probably three other employees, and you might speak to the employee level.
Yeah. Since we've been asked to look at the reduction in the amount of income and service for Morro Bay, I've done about seven scenarios of what could and couldn't be done with ballpark figures because we haven't done budgets yet. So you're looking on a flex route approximately two part-time people versus one full-time because of the hours of operation, which are approximately 10 hours. So you're probably going to run into either one full-time and a part-time. So we're reducing from what I've been told before to about half or less. So we've reduced our staff. I do believe that Susan, with all her duties and with the reduction of the amount of people that she's responsible for, could probably man a telephone from 8 to 12, so they could take calls for 4 hours. If I may address the student also for you, most students will go to school between 7:30 and 8 o'clock. Most seniors are not up at that time, so it really doesn't impact that. The impact comes after school. From my experience, which is hoping that down the road in a year or so that we're going to be on the track to recover. We're all going through this. This isn't just Morro Bay. I run a division in Hanford. I run a division in Dinuba, and I help in three other divisions because that's how we've had to cut our costs trying to help our city survive. So we're here also to help you do that. So any expertise, any questions that you might have, I'll be more than happy to answer them for you. There will be a drastic changeover for the seniors from being able to call the day of, which I also have and have recently gone to advance reservations. What we have found in advance reservations day before, it took a while to convince everybody this was necessary. But when you call the day of and you say, I want a ride at 10:30 and we're booked and it takes an hour to get to you, with advance reservation, you don't have that because we know where you're going, we know when you're coming home, so the bus is there on time. And I don't know if you've run into that, but I know most Dialorites do. And I get tired in my valley of hearing, well, I can't even buy ice cream because it melts before the bus comes. So, there are upsides to this, even though it's a cloud and it's not what we would all like. But be assured that MV Transportation has worked hard trying to give you enough scenarios to please the most amount of people in this town and keep you alive until better days come.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, in light of that, I think we're missing a financial opportunity not to include students if it's at a time when they're not being used by most other people, and probably workers would be on the bus as well going to work. So I would be in favor of that, and whatever MV can offer us, I think this is a nice opportunity.
Okay, well, I agree. I'd like to include the students. I was thinking, at least kids under 10 maybe. But if we've got time limit areas where they could be worked in, I think I'd like to leave that to staff to work out what might be feasible so that we're not cutting them off completely. And the other thing was the three-quarter mile coverage. I'm in favor of that, too. Everybody else?
Thank you for saying that.
Okay.
Thank you for saying that. I think we should be able to cover the whole town. Yeah. We're long and skinny, and there's very little bumps, and that should just be part of it.
Well, it's a matter of getting back to the fixed route, and that's what Janine was explaining. You can only go so far up and come so far back and still be on time. So
correct. And particularly with regard to the trailer parks that are out on South Bay Boulevard, to flex off the route, it's well over 3/4 of a mile. And to get back on, that may be the only flex trip of the hour at that point. And so that's why when we were looking at the routing and developing the routing, we did these little bump outs like up through Greenwood and along the beach tract, because if you were having to flex from Main Street all the way up to Nutmeg and back,
that's going to be about 10 minutes, and that may be your only flex trip for that hour.
And do you know how much business we have out there? Is it more that direction than it is towards the golf course going straight south on Piney? I'm wondering if the route, or you've probably adjusted the route as best you could, would
yes.
be my guess.
The route that you have before you is taking into consideration the existing users of the service. There's not very many, that's my understanding, out at the trailer parks on South Bay Boulevard. There are a few, but not many. And their options would be there's a Route 12 stop that's right there at the corner of Quintana and South Bay Boulevard. They can take the fixed route, regional fixed route, into Morro Bay to connect. There's also the ride-on senior shuttle that has been mentioned earlier. And then if the council does choose to do the pilot project and fund that, then there would be the capability of having some dial-a-ride service with that.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion that we direct staff to establish a year-round flex fixed route service with a three-quarter mile flex and to allow students at whatever time increment is that the right word? is appropriate. Do I hear a second? Okay. Any more discussion?
So,
the only other discussion would be that the evaluation of how the program's operating is just going to be built into the process. Yeah. And I don't think that needs to be part of the motion.
Okay.
And that was similar to what I want to ask, is that then I'd like to track the use from 7:30 to 8 and that it be specific so that it doesn't infringe on the regular ridership for the students. But I really am not in support of the flex route in the afternoon in the middle of the daytime hours. I would prefer that it was a fixed route. But if she can track that so we know if it's being used. I think most of them can get home in the afternoon from a fixed stop, so students.
All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Now, moving on to the volunteer bus.
Find out the exact costs and see what we can do, at least in terms of staff time, to get as much information as possible and come back to us at the minimum.
Pretty well done, that.
I
guess you were saying that Cambria has offered to talk.
And that's happened.
And that's happened, but do you have enough information to know where you would go from here?
Yes, I think it's information that can be provided to the senior group, mm-hmm. As well as the contact information for the gentleman up in Cambria, so that the senior group can talk to that individual and get an understanding, a feeling of this is how it operates. These were some of our rocky moments, bumpy moments, things that worked well, things that didn't, so that that group can get an idea as to whether that's something they would be interested in taking on, mm-hmm. whether it's something that they felt they had even maybe sufficient amount of volunteers presently within the group that they could feel like that they could start that. But a lot of that background information, the budget information,
you've already got.
Even the agreements between the county and the Cambria Community Council and the person who's doing the dispatching, because that's a separate agreement. I have all that information previously.
So what we would really need is for you just to move forward and make sure that you get communication going with some group or that group or whatever group.
Correct. It's that identification of the outside organization. Mm-hmm. We'd probably start with the senior group since mm-hmm. they're here and they've been here tonight and at least expressed an interest in looking at that idea and
so
providing that information to them.
All right. So you want to... Do you agree we can wait on this until we...
Oh, actually.
I mean, they can go ahead and communicate with the seniors, see where they can get going with it.
Yeah, I don't want to say that we're going to wait, because that means things might stop.
Well, no, I'm just saying it's like we're talking even a month, I think, before that SLOCOG suggestion will be available for us to look at.
That didn't sound like anything that's going to be real helpful, though, if it has to go between towns.
It's a combination of Dial-A-Ride, RTA, and what else?
A connector shuttle.
Right, a connector shuttle.
That seems more long distance than local.
My concern, or I guess my interest in this community bus concept, is that it becomes perhaps the most self-sufficient option for the community for long-term, most affordable, and the best place for those in the community that can help roll up their sleeves and participate as volunteers to express that activism. And I think we need to start that because my concern is that the state funding
I'm trying to hurry because we're running out of time.
Yeah.
So that's fine. If you want to discuss that, then we probably need to figure out where the money's going to come from.
And can we do that as part of the budget process? The other concern I have is we've only had preliminary discussions with the community groups that could be the volunteer core of this, whether it's one group or a coalition of groups. So I don't think we have to commit that funding tonight, but say we're really interested in supporting that concept, and can staff go ahead and start to explore that option more with the groups that might be interested.
Okay.
Is that?
Councilman,
I would agree with that totally.
Okay. All right, let's make a motion.
Okay, I would move that we direct staff to interact with potential community groups to explore the option of the development of a community bus program and come back to us with a report and a request for funding if needed.
Second.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay.
Madam Mayor,
yes.
before we move on, can I ask one last question? And in the motion that was approved for the Flex Fix route, we did not discuss the fare. Is that?
Oh, no, we didn't.
I'm sorry.
You wanted to change that?
I just want to leave it what it is rather than reduce it. I feel like to reduce it, we're just stepping back, and we're not raising it, but I don't understand why we wouldn't just leave it exactly where it is. It's already implemented.
Okay. How's the rest of the council feel? Want to keep the rates the way they are?
Well, I think the point was made that when you're on a fixed route, you don't pay as much as when you go door-to-door. And now you maybe you don't want to reduce it down to 60 cents.
No,
but,
I don't.
But I think you can't expect people to pay that much.
I just wanted to leave it at the rate it was at now.
I think.
And appropriate.
But is the rate now what you would not pay to go into San Luis, though?
The rate for, are you talking for like Route 12 fixed route? Route 12 fixed route is $1.25. That's Morro Bay to Morro Bay. If you're going from Morro Bay to SLO, it's zonal, and I don't know if it's $2.50 or $2.75 for that trip.
That's runabout.
Yeah, sorry.
The fixed route
is just the $1.25 and then 60 cents for the fixed route portion. The runabout, which changes from it's zonal, so if you're going Morro Bay to Morro Bay, it's a lesser rate than if you were going Morro Bay to San Luis and back.
So what's your proposal, Carla?
To leave it the same. I mean, it's still going to cost us $20,000 a month to run this. And so to reduce the rates, to me, just seems like we're stepping backwards rather than just leave them as is. And the suggestion in here was to reduce them.
Well, only
for the fixed route.
And she's talking about for the fixed route. You want to leave the $2.50. You want to go up, actually, for the door-to-door service.
Yes.
Or do you want to leave that the same as well?
No, it's $2.50 is what she slated in there.
Well, you're trying to...
I'm talking about the fixed route.
I know. And so you're trying to go down...
Flex route.
To keep that up when you're getting less service and charge more for the same amount of service. That doesn't make sense.
No, we're charging $1.50 right now.
Right, and so you'd bump it up to $2.50 to go door to door.
To go door to door.
Right, and on a fixed route, you're not picking me up at my door, and you're not taking me to where I'm going to work, but you want me to pay the same amount.
$1.50 is what you pay. She has it reduced.
Right,
for the door to door. Wait a minute, what? Okay, is that okay?
One thing I really need to add in the discussion. Discount fare on dial-a-rides $1.50, regular fares.
Options. There's just concern with...
Okay. All right. Excuse me for interrupting. Then my question is, does the rest of the council want to revisit the fare thing, or is it only Carla? We're going to leave it as it is, and we're going to move on, because we've got a lot of work to do.
Okay. I guess I'm comfortable for now, and I think we should leave ourselves the door open. If we see that it's not sustainable, then we have to increase it.
Okay. All right, moving on. Item B2, this is consideration of a month-to-month contract extension with NB Transportation and authorization to initiate the bid process for transit services operation and management. Make it quick.
The current agreement with NB Transportation to provide the dial-a-ride and trolley services will expire at the end of this fiscal year. There are provisions within the current agreement for extensions whereby all all the provisions that are within the agreement carry over to any extended agreement. Given that the city would be making some pretty dramatic changes to service, from the dialer, changing from the dial-a-ride to a flex route service, staff didn't feel that it was would be a good time to also go through a bid process and a potential change in contractor should another contractor be awarded for starting July 1. So what staff is recommending is a month-to-month contract extension that will allow the city to go through the change in service on July 1, and then also direct staff to initiate the bid process starting in December or January for service to begin July 1 of 2011. And in addition, as mentioned briefly in the prior staff report about the Transit Efficiencies Group, this would also allow for that process to be completed and for any concepts to come to the council for consideration. And if that concept were to be adopted and changed to, that service might change earlier than July 1 of next year. So that would give the flexibility to get out of the current agreement with MV and into the other agreement for the transit efficiencies option. This provides the most flexibility staff feels at this point. So what we'd like to do is have the city council, we're recommending conceptual approval of a month-to-month extension of the current Morro Bay dial-a-ride, which would then change to the Morro Bay flex route, and trolley operations and management agreement with MV Transportation pending the final approval of the compensation at your May 10th meeting. And that's what Mr. Dave Nay was speaking to earlier. With that, I'll turn it back over to the council for any questions or comments.
Any questions? All right, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward.
Seems like I'm getting all my public speaking in one night. As a contractor,
we need your name again.
Asking us to
we need your name again. Your name again, please.
I'm sorry, Dave Nave. And when you're asking us to do a month to month, it brings, while we're trying to reduce costs, it brings us into a situation where we have to expense off things month to month instead of amortizing them over an annual basis. If we're looking at possibly July 1st of 2011, in my humble opinion, it would make sense to shoot for that, allow MV to have at least 1 year to do its job and to amortize its cost out to save as much as we can for the city of Morro Bay, and then at that point have your bid process done and ready to go by July 1st. That would be my opinion. This was somewhat new for us, so this hasn't gone through the corporate office yet, but in the past where we've had month-to-month costs have escalated for simple reason we don't know if we're going to be here 30, 60, 90 days. If Janine feels it's going to be July 1st of 2011, I would recommend that you shoot for that point. Give yourselves plenty of time to do that. I believe you can write a contract extension where if something happens, you can have an out in 30 or 60 days, which we might agree to. But again, if you're looking at a July 1st as a shoot date, then it's an annual contract, and I think you would behoove yourself to do it that way so that we can save you as much as we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? Okay, we'll bring it back to the council.
I guess my concern, and I actually need to ask you a question. I'm sorry, if none there wasn't anybody else going to speak, I would have kept you up there. What if it was a six-month contract? Is that something that you do?
Yeah, it would benefit us to have the longest.
Right.
Again, I cannot speak for corporate because, again, this was somewhat new. I don't believe this was discussed prior, so we didn't have enough time to discuss it. But if you wanted to do that, we could have Janine certainly write us some letter of that.
Getting a price from somebody else or having them rebid it, and I think that's way too long.
I think the only difficulty here is that we're in motion, that we're in flex, and we don't know what's going to come down. We don't even know. I'm not even comfortable going out to bid because I don't know where we're going to be. So I'm not sure why we're saying 6 months in advance, let us have permission to go out to bid. So either we need to go out to bid sooner or we need to come back and say we're going to go out to bid later.
Well, I can support the 6 months, too. I think that even works with what we're dealing with the slow cog discussions. So, you have any comment on that? Okay. All right. So, who wants to make that motion?
I move that we extend MV a contract for 6 months, which would put us, would it be putting us at the in December? So 6 months from their expiration.
Is that what they, second, okay. Is that what they, the clause in there to allow us to cancel the contract with a 60-day notice? Thank you.
All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. All right. Make it real quick. We're going to take a short break. There we go. Okay, we're here. All right. In an effort to get to some people who have been waiting to give a presentation, is there anyone here to speak on item B3, which is the recommendation on staff levels for the 2010-11 fiscal year budget? Just to let everyone know, this is a report on some of the positions that we're going to have to eliminate, and it's informational only. It's on the agenda because I think our community definitely needs to know what we're facing as far as staffing, but at this point there's no action that needs to be taken, so we can continue the report until the next meeting, but I have to open the public hearing. So, opening the public hearing, seeing no one, will bring it back, and I move we continue this to our next meeting. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Item B4 is an amendment to the Morro Bay Municipal Code, adding chapter establishing regulations and procedures entitled Antennas and Wireless Telecommunications Facilities Ordinance. That's a mouthful, too. This, too, we don't have any urgency on it. However, if we can get through it in a fairly short order, then we can get a report from the Promotions Committee. So shall we attempt it?
I have two concerns, and I had three, and Mr. Schultz has eliminated one of them, and so I would just raise the other two, and so you can decide if you want to do it now or next week. I don't care.
All right. Well, since we have staff that's been waiting as well, how about we do a quick staff report?
Okay, then. I'll be happy to accommodate you. Good evening. I'm going to be presenting a brief staff report on the amendment to the Morro Bay Municipal Code, Title 17, adding Chapter 17.27.
Can you pull that mic a little closer to you? We seem to be soft.
I'm sorry.
There you go.
Establishing regulations and procedures entitled Antennas and Wireless Telecommunications Facilities Ordinance. And we just I just like to point out to you that this went a draft ordinance went before you on March 22nd, 2010, and there were some minor changes to these regulations that were once contained in the updated zoning ordinance, and we presented that, and the outcome of that meeting on the 22nd was that council directed staff to take into consideration comments made by both the council and the public and return with an ordinance for the first reading and introduction. And I'd like to just make a note of that the minutes of that meeting noted that the comments were made by Council Member Wilmholtz and John Barta, a member of the public. And we feel that we've covered Mr. Barta's comments in that he was speaking about radar antennas, and it seemed like there was a little bit of confusion. Staff listening to the tape, his concerns seemed to be about microwave facilities, and those are regulated in this ordinance. So we feel that comment's been addressed. As far as Councilmember Wilmholtz's comments, there were some comments regarding the maximum height limit, and as staff say in the staff report, we're interested in providing height limits that accommodate the industry so that we don't have an abundance of cell tower facilities. We all know that they do their projections. They try to get a range, so there's fewer antennas that cover a larger range, and part of that has to do with the height. We also would like to point out that the ordinance has a lot of regulations contained in it at this point, the new ordinance, that screen facilities. So we think that leaving the height a little bit where it is and just providing the increased screening, introduction, and first reading by number and title only.
And questions?
My two questions are on page 30, and they're on the exceptions. And one is just, I think, a clarification. It's under residential districts number one, letter C, antennas. And my question is the 25-foot height referring to the antenna or referring to the building or the structure?
That's ask your question again, please.
Is the 25-foot height at the end of the sentence mm-hmm. referring back to the word antenna or to the word building?
It's referring to the antenna, and it's just, as I read it, it's saying that when the overall height of the antenna, so if you're mounted on a building or a structure, when the overall height of the antenna and its support tower, pole, or mast does not exceed the height of 30 feet or 25 feet if located. So it'd be kind of all-inclusive is the way I read it.
So maybe a couple of commas or something to indicate that it's the antenna.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Or just, that just wasn't clear to me.
Yeah,
okay.
It's the overall building height plus the antenna that the intention is that
okay.
to regulate.
Cool. And then my last concern was regarding the satellite dishes, and I think this is really more of a question for staff, that we want to not have large satellite dishes that are in people's backyards or somewhere on their property visible. And so we're saying that they can't be in front yards or in public right-of-ways. But the concern was raised to me by someone who has one saying, well, can I not have one in my backyard if it says also adjoining properties? Because everyone's backyard then can look into my backyard and see that. So is that okay or not okay? How does that work?
Are you asking staff?
Well, I was really asking council, but okay. but the way you've included it here, you're saying that even people shouldn't be able to look out their back door and see someone else's backyard and see their satellite dish in their backyard.
That's how it's written currently. You'd have to screen it so it can't, so you're not seeing a satellite dish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if that's a reasonable request.
Well, greater than 2 meters. That one meter. Satellite dish at mm-hmm. that size or greater.
Mm-hmm. One meter.
1 meter.
Well, you know those old K-style satellites are really pretty much antiques now, and they're being phased out, and I don't think they're really a problem anymore. When they first came out, I had one in my backyard, and it looked like NASA back there. It was huge. And I pick up stuff from outer space on it. But they're pretty much phased out now.
Is this just to cover any old ones that may be around then, that this technology doesn't exist anymore, or do they still exist?
It's really hard to get service that uses those anymore. And some people may have some that are not hooked up anymore, still in their backyard. I got rid of mine, but most of them fold up, and they're pretty easy to get rid of. But like I say, you know, they're not really functional anymore.
So are you implying, Mr. Grantham, this isn't an issue then because people don't have them?
I don't think it is. I think most people have gotten rid of the ones that they had 10 years ago. I got rid of mine about 10 years ago. Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this issue, please come forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back. Any comments from this side of the table?
I would say that, and I have gone back and read it again, I appreciate the changes that have been made, and I think they did address our concerns. And outside of that one confusing thing that's now been clarified, I would move to approve this amendment to the municipal code.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Andrea?
An ordinance of the city of... Boy. An ordinance of the Council of the City of Morro Bay announcing findings and amending the Municipal Code by adding Chapter 17.27, establishing regulations and procedures entitled Antennas and Wireless Telecommunication Facilities, and modifying Chapter 17.12 to incorporate new definitions, 17.24 to modify primary district matrices to incorporate the text changes, 17.30 to eliminate Section 17.30.030F, antennas, Section 17.48, modify to eliminate Section 17.48.340, satellite dish antennas, and modify the title page to reflect the new chapter.
Thank you. That was a mouthful.
Exactly what they were doing and what they were trying to accomplish, and also just to see where they were and where they're different than the tourism bid, Business Improvement District, and that really they're, you know, although there's overlapping in what they're trying to accomplish, there also are quite differences. So part of that process was to redo their bylaws. I've included with your staff report Exhibit A, which is their current ones, Exhibit B, which is the red line, and C, the new ones. Although there looks like quite a bit of red line and blue line and underlined in the changes, it really there was only two or three sentences that really changed the bylaws. It was more just reconfiguring them. If you see the takeouts below, you'll find them up above. And because it just didn't, it was disjunctive as to what it was talking about. Part of the purpose belonged up top. But I'll let you let them talk about, and there's members of the Community Promotions Committee in the audience, about, you know, the reasons to change those purposes to really show that the Promotions Committee is not just about, you know, the tourism and marketing and advertising, but also as a community committee to show that connection between the community and tourism and the need for both of them to go hand in hand. So with that, I'll turn it over to John Sorgenfrey. He can go through his presentation and on the accomplishments of the Promotions Committee. As you see in the bylaws, they do have where they've changed where they would do this once a year for you before your budgeting to let you know what they've accomplished and what they're doing and what they intend to do the following year. So I'll turn it over to John. I'm sorry, Ed.
Good evening, Mayor, Honorable Mayor, City Council, City staff, that's what's left of you, and our vast viewing audience out there. My name is Ed Krovitz, and I'm chairman of your Promotions Committee. The Promotions Committee and the BID, I don't know which one to push here. John, I need some help. Okay. The Promotions Committee, the BID, the Visitor Center, and the Chamber of Commerce are working together to bring more visitors to Morro Bay. And I'm here tonight to discuss three topics. The first one is what the Promotions Committee is doing for marketing and advertising strategies, and what we intend to do, what we're doing now and what we will be doing. And John Sorgenfrey will address that. Secondly, we're going to talk about the importance of the Visitor Center. And Peter Candela, the CEO of our Chamber of Commerce, is here tonight to talk to you about that. And then I'll be discussing a new role for the Promotions Committee and asking you to approve our revised bylaws. And finally, Susan Stewart, a member of our committee, has some additional comments that she would like to make. So with that, I'll turn it over to John, who will be talking about our new marketing and advertising strategies, what we've done and what we are doing.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor, Council. It's nice to be with you. Appreciate you fitting us into a pretty busy schedule. As Ed mentioned, what I wanted to do first was to talk with you about the media strategies as it related to the Promotions Committee. They asked me to come before you tonight to kind of give you an update and an overview, but also wanted to cover how they've been working together with the BID to make sure that there's not a duplication of services and that we're working toward getting more tourists into the town together. First of all, the media strategy, the Promotions Committee kind of front-loaded their budget a little bit in the early fall because we knew that the BID was going to be coming online, but it had not yet got funded. And as the time, as you're all aware, it takes to have all the procedural things done, the Promotions Committee was ready to go because they had an approved budget. So they front-loaded their budget to where there was quite a bit of activity starting in late August into September, October, November. With that, then the BID came on track and started to fill in the holes that the Promotions Committee had in their budget. So it was all planned. They worked really closely together, and I think it worked very well so that we weren't absent with our advertising at a very crucial time in the fall when we really need the business. Also, what the promotions committee and the BID did together was talk about co-op opportunities that each budget could share. While the promotions committee and the BID both have separate budgets, separate accounts, there was situations where, I'll give you just one example, with the California State Visitors Guide, which is the main fulfillment tool for the state, there was an opportunity to replace the city of San Francisco and be right next to the table of contents with a full page ad. We were able to negotiate a very favorable rate, about half the price of what it normally would cost, and because of the BID and the promotions committee putting some of their funds together, we were able to get that full page and get the reduction in price. We've been started to see some great results from that. There was also a renewed effort by both parties to the promotions of Castle. Also, the attributes of our city, which was very peaceful, family-friendly, fun, safe, nostalgic, diverse, and centrally located on the Central Coast for all of the different things that people can experience when they travel here. This was also supported with more public relations for special events. Some time ago, this council asked that more events be offered and emphasized and advertised and promoted. The photography festival, which I'm now no longer saying new because it's on its second year, has done very well, and both the promotions committee and the BID supported that with public relations and outreach. The first annual Chili Cook-Off, as a brand new event, needed some support, and through PR and some advertising, we were able to make that first event very well attended. The Avocado Margarita Festival continues to be successful, and our Kite Festival, which we just had this last weekend, we had a major outreach in Los Angeles with LATimes.com. We had a story in Westways Magazine, so we're able to see that we'll be able to bring in people from Southern California who don't only come for the day but spend the night and increase our TOT. Even the yard sale, which provided a very unique PR opportunity. And the tall ships coming in November, we were lucky to get them. We thought they weren't going to come this year, and we're planning on doing an extensive PR campaign for that. And, of course, our bird festival, which we always promote. There's been some discussion about creating packages centered around these events, and these packages would involve both the hotels, activities, and dining. And we found that people really do want to have a package centered around their experience, especially as it relates to a particular event. One of the things that we're trying to do, too, is to look at ways to take these events beyond just the overnight but into 3- and 4-day stays. So having activities for them to enjoy, say, Friday morning, Saturday, and then actually having a major event on Sunday to get them to stay longer. There's talk about in this next year coming up with a 70s revival weekend and 3-day experience, which we would also have a Volkswagen show along with that, vintage Volkswagens. Taste of Morro Bay, a food and wine festival, is also in the planning stages. Crew races in the bay, and also a watchable wildlife event. So these are things that the promotions committee is going to be working on next year to develop, and then working with the BID to promote. As you're all aware, the branding and website work has been pretty significant. We totally redesigned the MorroBayDog.org website. And this was, we worked with the BID board to develop a consistent logo for all of our branding. We also produced a new creative campaign for all the internet and print outreach. And we worked together to fully redesign the Morro Bay website, as I mentioned, to create more overnight stays and promote local businesses and services. This is the logo that we came up with, and this was a totally joint effort on the promotions committee as well as the BID, coming up with something that both committees felt was appropriate. We had tended over the years to have kind of a variety of different fonts and typefaces for our logo. The Discover Your Better Nature was widely produced and branded, but we wanted to come up with a logo that was consistent since we have two bodies basically placing ads, so this was achieved. Our online advertising, a lot of times you'll see examples of print because they're easy to show. A banner ad and some of the things that we do online are not quite as visual, so I have some print examples for you. In fact, if you wouldn't mind, you guys have those already? Okay, good. But I want to tell the council that probably a good 70 to 80% of our efforts now are not in traditional print. They're online. And when we talk about Fresno Bee or we talk about the Los Angeles Times, more so than not, we're talking about their websites. So we did not run an ad in the LA Times, a traditional newspaper ad, this last year, but we ran a very significant online campaign and continue to do that. So basically, our online
can
advertising
I interrupt?
We're involved.
John, can yes. I just ask a question? What's the difference in cost between a print ad and the online? Is it cheaper?
I would say it's cheaper. And one of the things that is really great about online advertising is print is always difficult sometimes to track. We do have the ability in some of the publications like Travel 50 and Beyond and Sunset, which still have bingo cards. So we're able to track those print ads pretty significantly. But all of our advertising for some time has been directed getting people to go to the moralbay.org website. That's what we see as our main fulfillment. So with online advertising, we're able to track it right down to, say, if we do an email campaign where we target it, latimes.com, we know how many emails were sent, how many were opened, and then how many click through to our website. The same is true for referring websites, and I'll mention this in a minute, but latimes.com has become the number one referring website to moralbay.org, surpassing the County Visitors Bureau, and then you're able then to tell Yahoo, I want all of your wine aficionados. So whenever you run an ad on Yahoo, and it's a wine ad, it will go directly to the people who are wine enthusiasts. So if you wouldn't know that, you're just going to Yahoo to get information, but the ad that would appear in front of you would be a wine ad. And that's what they're kind of scary, but effective. So that's what that is. So the ads that you see before you, one of the things that we've tried to do, this was an ad that actually ran in the state in some of the California publications. When you find yourself in California, lose yourself in Morro Bay. Because we're finding a lot of people know about coming to California. In fact, the state even talked about the fact that the numbers were diminishing for Europeans to travel to California because Europeans felt like once they'd been to San Francisco or L.A., they'd been there, done that in California. So what the state's finally done, which is a good thing for the Central Coast, is they're starting to promote these other regions beyond just the L.A. and San Francisco markets. So this ad's directly related to those people to say you haven't really seen California. And if you really want to experience California that you might have dreamed about, you can find that in Morro Bay. And then again, increasing our branding of Discover Your Better Nature. One of the things that both committees decided on is we wanted to have a very dramatic photo, a little less copy, but always wanted to let people know where we were located too. And this one here that you have before you, again, just emphasizing our rock and our harbor. And then this is some examples of some screenshots for the new redesign of the moralbay.org website. This is the homepage, which has a flash element. I'm sure you've all seen that. This is the dining page, lodging page, which also has some new searchable functions to it. And also we're in the process of putting a reservation page through the use of JackRabbit. So people will be able to come on to the lodging page, they'll type in the dates that when they want to come to Morro Bay, and all the hotels that have availability will come up before them. And this is all done automatically through software to mine everybody's inventory to determine who has availability and who does not.
Is that all hotels in Morro Bay or just chamber-related hotels?
All hotels in Morro Bay. And then this is an example of the activities page. So some of the new features, we have more coordination with our branding campaign on the website where we really are emphasizing the Discover Your Better Nature. User navigation so people can move around on the website. We have a lot of pages, a lot of content. We found ways to get them to move around a little easier. More user interaction. Build your own itineraries and packages. We have an enhanced video player. One of the things that's interesting about video and one of the goals for next year as well as this year is to increase our video presence because next to Google, the highest search engine is YouTube. So as people go in and search for something, Google's number one, number two is actually YouTube. So more and more people are finding ways to find their theme or their destination through looking at a video. And we want to be on top of that. So expandable searchable database, as I mentioned, with the Jackrabbit that will be a feature. Expanded calendar of events pages where we have just not only an event, but we have a landing page that tells more about the event. Greater call to action, we're offering getaways, free getaways, contests to win. It's one of the challenges of having a destination is to try to find some stronger call to actions, and we've done that through contesting. And then the social media, we're in the process. We have a Facebook established. We have a travel log, which is a controlled blog, so we're able to control the submissions so we don't have anything that is inappropriate. Our photo gallery, which is a very social media type program where people can submit their photos. They tell what camera they took it on, how their experiences in Morro Bay. That has become incredibly successful. We probably have 3 or 4 photos a week that are submitted. And we also installed a weather station and surf reports. And then one of the things that I think the council will be appreciative of is a greater stats as it relates to the website. Through the BID's funding, I was able to bring a consultant that I have that's worked with me on other clients that does really sophisticated stat reporting for the website. And we switched over to Google Analytics, and we're able to look at lodging reports so we can see all the different lodging properties in Morro Bay and how many people came from morrobay.org right to their own property. We can actually even look even further and find for those who have reservation pages how many actually went onto the reservation page. So a direct relationship between the morrobay.org site and how many people went on to the hotel sites. So with that, I want to bring Peter Kandel up. He's going to talk to you a little bit about some of the results that we've had. I just want to say relative to about it, and I think that we're going to start seeing some significance as it relates to TOT. And we are still sort of in the infancy stages of the BID as that just got started, really kind of ramping up around November, December.
I asked John, why would you go to the Caribbean when you could come to Morro Bay?
Well, that's true. One of those two places I would be retired at.
Do you still have a webcam?
Yes, we do.
I've been to the Caribbean, and I'm back here. It's the best place in the world. I'm Peter Candela, Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, Madam Mayor, Council Members, City Staff. I'm supposed to click this, aren't I? As you can see, I've been up here before in the last couple of months letting everyone know about our increases in our fulfillment. It takes a partnership between agencies and organizations to make any of these things possible. John Sorgenfrey and TJ Advertising, it's the BID, it's the promotions, it's the visitor center, it's the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, together working for one common goal, and that is to bring people into our beautiful city to enjoy what we enjoy here. It's reflected in the number of increases in our fulfillment or requests for information about Morro Bay so they can come and visit. This is just a small example. There's two magazines here, Travel 50 and Beyond and Sunset Magazine. You can see in years past our average was somewhere between 200 to 250 fulfillments or requests for information per month per advertising campaign, and it breaks down per month. 800 to 900. I mean, that's phenomenal. That's 4 times what we've experienced in the past. In Sunset Magazine, you can see from 300 to 350 in the past to 1,800 to 2,000. That's 6 times the amount of fulfillment that or request for information that we've had in the past. Honestly, this is phenomenal. We're in the same league, if you will, with Pismo or Paso Robles with their fulfillment. They're doing about the same thing that we're doing, and we're just ramping up now. It's going to take this full team to make this come into the final gold, and that is to bring increase to TOT and our sales tax. I can't tell you how important it is to finish what we've started. We've increased our advertising by at least $500,000. You can see the result just from what we have been showing in the last few months. I think what we're doing is important, I think it's something that we need to give to our retailers and to all of our businesses. We need to have more people come into our town. We're on the right track. I see things working in a very positive way. This next slide is what John was referring to. It's the LATimes.com. Now, he's pretty much explained what that's all about. I just want to bring it into reality. At the Kite Festival we had this last Saturday, I was at the chamber booth, the informational booth that we had there. A gentleman came up with his wife and two little kids. They had two of the kites that the young kids were making, and he says, "This is phenomenal." I says, "I live in L.A. I saw your ad. I came down to Morro Bay, never been to Morro Bay before, brought my kids. We were offered free kites, design the kites, and go out and fly the kites. This is the first time I've had an opportunity to fly kites with my kids, and this was amazing. Put me on your mailing list. I want to come back. I want to find out what else you have to offer." Truly, this is a testimony to exactly what we've been doing. It is so imperative that we continue to do what we're doing to finish up what we have started. We're on the right track. We've got to stay on that track. There's more information coming, and Ed Krovich is going to finish out this. Sorry. I'm very tired. All right.
Interesting. That's me. Okay. I'm going to be talking about some new directions and goals of the Promotions Committee to build a stronger city. The Promotions Committee will continue to support the BID effort, encouraging more overnight stays to build more revenue for the city. And in addition, the Promotions Committee will do the following. We're going to develop and coordinate the co-op opportunities with local businesses and hotels to support visitor packages that John mentioned earlier. We're going to produce a community awareness campaign on the value of tourism for the citizens of Morro Bay to make the citizens of our town dining and other services that Morro Bay has to offer. We're going to develop packages for events to Morro Bay and encourage longer stays in Morro Bay. Working with the Chamber, we will explore new events to promote Morro Bay and encourage more visits. And while the Promotions Committee doesn't really produce events themselves, there's no reason why we certainly can't help encourage these promotions or these events and help promote them also. The Promotions Committee serves the City Council and thereby the citizens and businesses of Morro Bay. We are more or less the watchdog of your and our advertising budget. We feel our new refined role will make this effort even more successful, working with the BID, who administer their own ad budget. The BID goes down next year by 2%, and this is going to result in a decrease in budget of over $160,000. And without the Promotions Committee funding, it would take it down another $125,000, for a total reduction of $285,000 in lost budget. This would leave us at the bottom of the funding from our competitors. And we must compete like everyone else for the tourist dollar, and they're all doing it. Every town in this county is. And the new slow BID, which was recently formed, adds another $1.2 million for our competitors of Avila Beach, Cambria, and Cayucas. They'll have that much more money to spend than they had last year. So we are not asking for an increase at this time due to the current economic situation of the city. But we do respectfully ask that the funding level remains the same so we may continue to do our work for the businesses and citizens of Morro Bay, and that you approve the revisions of our bylaws. Susan Stewart, who is a member of our committee, has a few comments she'd like to make, and after that, we'll be open for any questions that you might have from either of us or any of us. Susan.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Council. I'm Susan Stewart. I own Beads by the Bay and realized I've been on the Promotions Committee almost as long as I've owned the business. So not too long, but we're getting there. Over the years, I've developed a deeper understanding of the value of having a city take responsibility for branding and promoting its community and businesses. It's not enough to put an open sign in the window and stand behind the counter with a smile on your face. People shop in town not because there is one business, but because there are many. They live in or visit a town because of its ambiance, its schools, its services, and amenities. There's been a lot of discussion lately about branding and what the identity we present to the greater public should be. But those of us who live and work here and have raised our children here know that Morro Bay is a treasure to be preserved, cherished, and shared. We've been fortunate to have a great advertising company to advise us and develop the kinds of campaigns and website that help to inform folks in other communities about the opportunities and events in Morro Bay. Although budget cuts in the recent past reduced our ability to target advertising to some of our more lucrative markets, for example, in the Bay Area to the north, we have been able to have an impact in Southern California and with our neighbors in the Valley. This year, with the addition of the Morro Bay T-Bid promoting the lodging industry, we have been able to develop larger ads, a fresher and more current website, and have seen results in the responses at our visitor center and online. And I would say for myself, in my business, I've seen folks coming certainly from all over the state, out of the country. They're getting here. Our newly developed goals and bylaws reflect the fact that while the T-BID's mandate is to promote the lodging industry, there is still a need to market the rest of the businesses, events, and general environment of Morro Bay to facilitate a successful town and a healthy city budget. During three meetings with the help of City Attorney Rob Schultz and with John Sorgenfrey, we reviewed and amended our bylaws to reflect the new focus we would like to develop in our advertising, including reaching out to day visitors as well as overnight guests to encourage repeat local shopping and dining. Additionally, we believe it is important that our own community understands why we need to promote our town and how the money such promotions brings in supports the services we often take for granted. If I have learned anything in the last 3 years, it is that this community does not stand on one leg. We are interdependent, and if any one aspect of our town suffers or diminishes, the whole community is affected. It will not be enough to just promote the lodging industry to keep the kinds of businesses open and events happening, which will attract those daytime visitors who keep our sales tax revenues coming in. We do not want Morro Bay to be a town that people pass through once and never again. I would urge you to adopt our amended bylaws and to continue funding the Promotions Committee at the current level. People coming here because they get something they can't get somewhere else. There's no reason to come here to go to a Kohl's or a TJ Maxx. Yes, that would help sales tax, perhaps. But I think we have the kinds of, what would you call them, not cottage industries, but the unique and charming things that draw people from all over. I have repeat customers from Santa Maria regularly, from Santa Barbara regularly, from San Francisco. They come down just to shop at the bead store or just to go to Cotton Ball. We have those kinds of unique stores, and I think part of what we should and can and are doing is to market that. Come here for something you don't find somewhere else. People from Monterey come here because we're like what Monterey used to be, you know, and isn't anymore. It's big, it's unmanageable. So I don't think we need those kinds of anchor stores here. If anything, I think that would flatten our town.
If I could just add, I think that the shop local aspect is also kind of a stay vacation theme as well. That I think a lot of people are when they comes time to go on a vacation, they're going to part with a little bit of their money, but I think they're going to be reluctant to go to Hawaii, certainly Europe right now with all the things that are going on. And I think that what we want to try to encourage is that they can come here and stay, shop, and kind of experience a little bit of nostalgia for those aging baby boomers. And again, as Susan said, something that you just can't find elsewhere. It's kind of funny because sometimes we'll go down to Santa Barbara, and when I check in, I'll tell people that, you know, where I live, and they'll say, well, we go there all the time, and they're in Santa Barbara. So we sort of pass each other along the freeway, and I think that that's going to be true for our area right here. I mean, so many people, even we're guilty of it ourselves. I mean, we don't always go to all the attributes that we have in each of our communities because we're busy and we just don't think about it. But when we do, we recognize how much there is. And I think that's really what the Shop Local program would be. It's certainly to support retail, but it's also the whole stay vacation aspect.
I have one other answer to that also, Rick, and that is that besides shopping, we also have dining. And we have a unique fresh fish here. Many people from the county cities come here just to dine, and then they go home. We want them to be here, too. So we'll be promoting that also.
And one last thing. In 3 weeks, our oyster tour is going to start. We have an organization that purchased a boat, 25 people, 25 to 28 people aboard. It's the first of many tours to come. We have some ideas about the avocado tour and a farm tour, which we're in the middle of putting together as well. So there's a lot of things that, in addition to what we've talked about, we'll bring these people in as well.
Other questions? Anybody?
I guess it's kind of a question in relation. I really like the transition of focus towards more of a local focus for the promotions committee. I think that's something that we've seen as perhaps a nice thing for us to try to get to, but because the promotions committee for a long while was going alone, the focus was outside and bringing people in. So I really like that transition. I guess I'm curious to know what you're thinking to focus even closer to home with the Morro Bay residents. And I like that idea of working with an education and awareness campaign about the importance of tourism and how that supports our local services and infrastructure and so on, but also getting back to helping the locals rediscover what we have in our downtown on the Embarcadero in North Main. And I just wanted to know if there were some things that were really focused on the locals and perhaps even helping locals develop their own business concepts. I know we've been working on that for a while, but that's something I wouldn't want us to lose track of as we transition. I'm excited to see that. Seems like we're there, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about the Morro Bay resident as part of this.
A few years ago, the prior chairman of the promotions committee, David Weissman, who came from New York, came out with a campaign. He had a similar idea, and we tried to do this. We came out with a button, and it said, I love Morro Bay tourism. I love tourists, and it had morrobay.org. The idea of that campaign that was to give those buttons to tourists, citizens rather, so that tourists would see these, and citizens would be more friendly toward the tourists, or the tourists would see these buttons and say, I'm welcome here. They like us. I want to be here. And then that was designed after the I Love New York campaign. And these buttons were supposed to be collectibles, and we were going to issue them on and not be implemented within the next calendar year. As if you approve our new budget, we'll have the funds and the wherewithal to do that. So we hope you'll help us along with that.
Thanks, Mr. Krovitz. I guess I just wanted to get more into actually the local dollar that I've seen some statistics about just how big of a opportunity or a purchase power is here residing within our town or within the Estero Bay region. And I want to make sure that that's not forgotten, and that we take this opportunity now that the T-bid is in place to help refocus our locals, encourage the awareness of the multiplier of shopping locally, supporting our local businesses, and what that does, recirculating dollars in our own community. I think we all can strive to learn more about what that does in support of everything that we depend on here as
far
as the community.
Our focus will be on the Shop Local also within the city and with the immediate surrounding communities to come to Morro Bay and spend their dollars.
I like to hear that. I just wanted to make sure we don't lose track of that as part of our efforts.
We have no intention.
I think, like Ed talked about the button, I think that, you know, due to the limited budget we had to launch that campaign, the button was good, but the awareness thing would have been better to do before the button. So I guess what we're trying to say is we want to do this awareness campaign for the locals to understand what the value of these visitors coming into their town, so they'll be more inclined to want to wear the button. And I think also the multiplier effect that you talked about, you know, just putting out that definition and showing that scenario, I think will be valuable for the locals. And then also, we talked a lot about events. I think having events that the locals would actually like to go to. I know I live in Pismo Beach, and when we have the car show, which is very significant, you know, for our city, but no locals ever go into town, including myself, because you have 50,000 people in town, but there are other events like the Taste of Pismo and things like that the citizens really do enjoy. So I think there'll be a concerted effort to have events that both the locals as well as locals and tourists would enjoy, and then that thereby giving the locals more of an opportunity to enjoy those, like the 60-70 revival and the VW show. We see that as a very, you know, grassroots local event that eventually branches out into more outreach for Southern California.
I've got to add a comment here as far as all of us as citizens being ambassadors for the city, because I can't tell how many times that I've been down walking on the Embarcadero, and I'm usually by myself, so maybe I'm more approachable, but people will say, "Guy, where's a good place to eat?" And it's great because not only do you get to tell them, you know, there's this, and this, but you also get to ask where they're from and how long they've been here. And it's wonderful. That happens to me regularly. So every citizen of this community, if you are down there when the visitors are down there, listen to their conversations. If they're walking by saying, "Gosh, where do you think we should eat?" Say, "I got some ideas," you know? I mean, it's amazing how you can be your own ambassador for the community. And it's really worth it to get out there amongst those people. They're nice.
I just had one last comment too. Something that I really am appreciative to hear about is the ag tourism, marine tourism development, because that truly is a unique and exciting and emerging industry for us to support our local farms and marine industries, and also really do something that many communities don't have the opportunity to do. So I'm excited to see that, and I think it's a really good niche for us.
I've got one other question, and this is something that came up during the Bird Festival, I think. Did we ever do a survey of the hotels and motels as far as which ones are totally ADA compliant and which ones aren't? And is that now on the website? Because I know that we had a comment from a Bird Festival participant who said they rented an ADA room, which was not. It had a wide doorway, and that was it. So we really need to make sure that whatever we're advertising for that, it really is ADA compliant, so that people aren't, because she went to San Luis very unhappy because she had not been given the correct information. So have we done that survey?
I believe it's just it's what has been put on their brochures, and we have reaching out to all of the not just the hotels, but also the restaurants, in making sure that they are compliant. And they're being well-received. As a matter of fact, next week we start our annual. We go through every single hotel and every single restaurant, the visitor center does, and they do this at least two or three times a week until we've gone through the whole town and, you know, we see for ourselves where the compliances are. And we have Don Double D as a very good.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. He
great.
Goes through.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. So it's being done.
That's important. Yes. To effectively market Morro Bay as a destination point for tourism, recreation, business, and community events. The CPC shall provide input and recommendations to the City Council on policies and expenditure programs to advertise and promote Morro Bay in geographic and demographic areas both inside and outside San Luis Obispo County. That was my suggested correction for the first paragraph. And I know I got responses from you that seemed to be all right. Okay. It just simplifies it, clarifies it for me anyway. Do the rest of you agree?
It works for me. I did have a concern that within the new bylaws, there wasn't anything really specifically talking about the local the local population and their importance to be considered as part of these campaigns. Mm-hmm. And so I think it would be good for us to call that out a little more in this somewhere, in a real simple way. But I just didn't want that our local population to be there's nothing specific mm-hmm. for them.
And, I would point out that the parts you've taken out mm-hmm. were the specific parts that they discussed, which was that interconnection between the community and the community promotions. So you've
that was a sentence that didn't make any sense to me. I didn't understand that sentence at all. I'm sorry. What does that mean?
Well, that's why I had some concern with your adjustment, because I really I felt like it was somewhat there as it is now, and with your adjustment, that's taken out, so mm-hmm. it really kind of disappears. And I just want to make sure that it's in there somewhere.
Can somebody explain it to me in other words what that means? I'm sorry,
exactly
I really
what,
don't understand.
I think it was exactly what Susan was talking about, is making sure that tourism can coexist with the community and having those events, making sure that there's community outreach, and those items are still part of this promotions committee, and it's not just all about the tourism dollar.
Okay,
that's what they were trying to.
That sentence isn't saying it to me.
Well, I mean, it's the purpose of the CSP is to be a proactive, diverse committee that will build a partnership between the city and the community, thus maintaining the highest quality of life for the residents of the city of Morro Bay. It's saying even though we want tourism, we recognize tourism, but there still has to be an important quality to the citizens of Morro Bay, is what they were trying to commute. So we could work on it again.
Yeah, can
and
we
for
say
other
it?
Language, but I don't, I mean, if you take it out, you're basically gutting out their whole purpose for
okay,
the amendments.
Okay, well, I understand that now, and I agree that that's important to put in, but can we put it in a way that actually says it better? Because this just doesn't get it across to me. Does it to anybody else? I mean, is it?
I felt like it was speaking to the real issue that I came into this item having, which is the local focus mm-hmm. as well. So I was comfortable with it. If it's going to be adjusted, I just want to make sure that that's continued.
Okay.
If the council would like, we can send it back to them to redo that middle part of that section, so that it's better understandable to you, and bring it back as a consent item. I think your other change had to do with the only other change was with
right in the second paragraph. I said to simply delete "in addition," just say the CPC, and then the third sentence where it talks about the CPC shall work with the bid. Just to clarify again. Shall work with the bid to mutually support each other's goals for marketing, advertising, and budgeting. It just seemed cleaner.
That's fine.
And then on qualifications, in the second paragraph, and this is where I think this was addressed in the comments, so I will agree with that too. Second paragraph under qualifications to say, additionally, each committee member will be required to participate in the operation of the visitor center by volunteering 4 hours, and I understand what you're saying. Just to become familiar is probably better wording anyway.
I disagree. I thought it was good that they would have to go work there. I think just participating in a business forum or the chamber mixer doesn't get it.
Okay. Well, again, for those of you that don't have what I wrote, members are also encouraged to attend business forums, chamber of commerce meetings, and merchants association meetings as their time allows. The argument that was made in, I guess this was an email, was that to have volunteers working at the visitor center on a busy weekend or a summer day is actually detrimental to good service rather than helpful, because they don't know what they're doing yet. Mm-hmm. So if they are going to be required to volunteer for a certain amount of time, it needs to be a time that's efficient and helpful for the visitor center, not just a busy day. So
well,
I don't know if we want
to. Maybe they just need to observe and not help.
I'm sorry?
Maybe observation.
Yeah.
Witnessing rather than helping.
Well, it doesn't have to be a requirement. It's up to you. You
I'm fine with the suggestion of it, but not making it a requirement per se.
So make it should instead of required?
If I'm on there, I have to go. I've been in business for 22 years in town, so now I have to go to be able to be on this committee and volunteer there specifically. I mean, is that basically what you're saying to mm-hmm. someone? I don't agree with that. But that's
so You want to change it to should instead of required?
Sure. Okay with me.
So each committee member should familiarize themselves.
Should.
We can go back to their wording.
I'm fine with should.
There's a comment from out there. Yes.
I think that probably an observation is enough. We want our committee members to know what goes on in the visitor center. They don't necessarily have to do the job or work the job. But as Betty said, observation probably would be enough, and maybe requiring them to just observe for 2 hours at their convenience, not mandate a summer day or a Saturday or a weekend. Just go down, stand around, take a look, sit in the corner, and watch what goes on. So you'll be at least familiar with what we're doing, how fulfillments are taken care of, how phone calls are answered, what the visitor center does, see the number of people that come in, observe the questions that are asked, see the answers, listen to the answers that we give. And I think that would be enough. Our committee just needs to be knowledgeable of what the visitor center does, because we are running the ads that are actually making the visitor center work and do the fulfillment. And they will see the results of our work at the visitor center. So I just believe observing would be enough. They shouldn't be required to work or just make it at their convenience a couple of hours until they get a knowledge of what goes on. And I think that would be enough. That's my opinion as the chairman.
Okay, so then going back to the original wording, by volunteering, by observing for 2 hours, does that... How do you want to word that? Observing.
Well, I actually like your language better and just change the word from required to should.
Okay. All right. So additionally, each committee member shall familiarize themselves or shall what? I'm at a loss for words. Help me.
It's encouraged to spend several hours in the visitor center.
Okay, should familiarize themselves with the operation of the visitor center by spending
4 hours
time observing the operation. How's that? By spending time observing the operation. And then you want to keep the members are also encouraged to attend business forums, chamber of commerce meetings, and merchants association meetings as their time allows.
I don't need that part.
I think it's all helpful. I mean, it should know what does the merchants association do? Mm-hmm. You know, what does the chamber do? Mm-hmm. And the business forums at least once to see what goes on.
It's pretty soft. It's an encouragement. It's not a requirement.
Okay. All right. Then the one thing that we want to put in is the local part, and we just want to word that a little better. And my brain is drained of words right now, so can you come back with something that expresses that a little bit more clearly?
Yeah, just a motion maybe from council saying to make the changes that were recommended and to bring back the bylaws at a future meeting.
Whatever you come up with, just to make it a little more clear. All right. I'll make the motion. Okay. I would move that the...
Do you want me to do it?
Yeah, go ahead.
I move that we adopt the Community Promotions Committee's recommendations for their bylaws regarding, or just adopt their with a new wording on the middle of the first paragraph, and that the second paragraph of qualifications reflect Ms. Peters' comments. And second, about this, reflect the comments on the sheet that she's given us.
Okay.
And that be returned for consent calendar. Thank you.
Second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Thank you very much. And I'm sorry it was so late. very empty room. We'll bring it back to the council. And any comments or a motion, whatever?
We have just one comment before the motion, and that's that I find it disappointing that we had to draft an amendment to the ordinance rather than just give direction.
Oh, it's all official. All right.
I move approval of the first reading of Ordinance 557 by title and number only. You'd think I'd know that after 8 years.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Andrea?
This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay to amend Section 2.16.080 of Chapter 2.16 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code regarding the duties of the city attorney.
Okay. All right. Item D2, approval of the Service Retirement Incentive Program for the fiscal year 2010-11 budget.
Thank you and good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. During the budget process for fiscal year 2009-2010, the City Council offered a service retirement incentive program to employees that were eligible to retire. The program offered amounts of $5,000 to $10,000 depending on the retirement date, with department heads being offered a similar amount through, though configured differently. Staff is once again recommending a SRI, Service Retirement Incentive Program, in conjunction with the 2010-2000 budget process. Especially in recent years, a number of cities have structured retirement incentives as a means of short-term and long-term savings. There are certainly a number of ways to structure a retirement incentive, with the most popular being purchasing 2 years of CalPERS retirement service credit, paying retiree health benefits for a specified time, contributing to a retiree health savings account, and providing a lump sum payment. Prior to offering the program last year, we considered and evaluated a number of various retirement options and programs and determined that the lump sum payment was the best option. The program certainly does not add ongoing costs to the city, as do some of the other retirement incentive programs that staff explored. As an example, purchasing PERS service credit potentially affects the city PERS rates for a number of years. This program can create both potential short-term and long-term savings for the city and allows employee flexibility. The lump sum incentive provides individuals with the flexibility to use the funds in any manner they choose. While the program last year offered a different incentive sum depending on the retirement date, staff is recommending a one lump sum of $10,000 be paid to those who commit to retire by June 30th, 2010. The SRI program was informally communicated to the employees during our employee forum held on Wednesday, April 14th, 2010, and we would certainly officially communicate that to employees either tomorrow or on Wednesday should the City Council approve staff's recommendation. I will point out in the second paragraph to the end, last year we specified that temporary part-time and contract employees were not eligible to participate in this program. As you know, we have two allocated positions in the city of Morro Bay that are not full-time, one half-time position and one three-quarter-time position. And last year, we indicated that we would not extend this program to those employees. This year, I have not done that, and certainly something the council might want to consider. This year, I've left that out, saying that it will not be available to temporary or contract employees, but it could be available to those two allocated positions that are not full-time. With that, I'm happy to answer questions that you might have concerning this program.
Okay, questions? Rick? Yeah. Okay, so what you're saying is that it can be used for those two allocated positions.
That's how I've left it this year, okay. But I wanted to make sure the council understood that.
Yeah, because I think that is definitely deserved, considering how long those positions have been working.
Yes, I'm going to respectfully disagree. I think that a half-time position that you're, regardless, I'm not talking about people and positions, and I think we need to separate being accused always of voting on emotions, that you're giving a half-time employee the same retirement option as you are a full-time employee, and I disagree with giving somebody who makes $30,000 a year working part-time $10,000 as a retirement versus somebody who's a full-time employee making $60,000 or $70,000. It's about, I appreciate that we're giving them an opportunity to say thank you for your services, but $10,000 is a lot of thank you for a $30,000 position or whatever value. Mm-hmm. So I would like us to at least consider making that half that price or somewhere in there.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. No, that would be fine. Make it a $5,000 for someone who had not been working full-time. how's the rest of council feel about that? Yeah, okay. Yeah, but I'm glad that we are offering
it. Thank you. Oh, no, no, I misunderstood then. I thought you meant giving the $10,000, yeah, period.
Okay. All right. There's no comment. Then I will move approval of the Service Retirement Incentive Program with the addition of a $5,000 benefit for the part-time positions. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None.
I think that this would help both bodies out, both the city and the Coastal Commission, if we could take a different approach and get some things moving.
Okay. Questions? Comments?
Well, I'd be interested to hear any comments from Mr. Livick on the idea.
I do agree with this, that, and we are going to be meeting with the Coastal Commission staff in June, is it?
Early to mid. We've got a date. We just can't remember exactly what that date is, but it's been confirmed.
Yeah, I was just trying to look it up. It's been very difficult scheduling with them, I think.
It's June 23rd. It's the anniversary of my Marine Corps service.
Okay, I thought it was a little earlier than that, but it's been very difficult scheduling it. It would, and part of that would be, like you said, the staffing is just unbelievable. They're furloughed. And when they're furloughed on different Fridays, it really, you know, took out that whole day. And then they, once a month they've got meetings. Because I don't want just want to meet with just one. Mike Watson is probably the local planner that we deal with mostly. But wanted to meet with not only him, but his boss and his boss's boss. So to put all three of them in the same room has been difficult. But we've got a date, June 23rd. We'll go up to Santa Cruz. And so I certainly believe that's the end game. That will be, they'll ask us to withdraw it. I'm just wondering from a status point, do you want them to do that, or do you want to do it now, or do you want to wait till after that and see what their recommendations are? I think you're right. It's been a multiple of things. Not only has it been their staffing, but it's been too hard for them to get their hands around and wrap it around. We did a matrix. We did the best we could with it, but that matrix is very difficult to read to find out where the changes are. And, you know, quite frankly, it could even be stale, being from 2005 and now being 2010. In some of the areas, most of them don't change, but some of the areas might have changed a little bit. So.
I would rather be proactive and make it kind of a, you know, a hand to them saying, you know, we've heard your concerns, we have our concerns, and we're willing to do this, and have you take that message to them.
Well, I called our member on the Coastal Commission, Supervisor Sargent, today, and I asked him, I said, you know, what do you think about this? Is that something that you think that the commission would deal with positively? And he said his only concern, he said, yes, it sounds like a way to get things moving, that every time you do it, every time you send something new up, put in a letter saying, you know, that this is why we're doing it. Because the suspicion, apparently, on the Coastal Commission, if they take things piecemeal, is that, oh, they're hiding something. That somehow the big picture, they're giving it to us a little bit here and a little bit, mm-hmm, there, so we won't see what's hidden. Mm-hmm. So he said to make very sure each time you submit whatever your specifics are, that you're saying, because our whole document is so complex, we are trying to get these things done because we need to implement them now. So
that's easy to do.
Yeah. So he was, you know, in favor of it as long as we made sure that every time we send something, we make that specification. I guess I would like sort of a combination of that to when you go up there, if you say, you know, the council's talked about this, and can we do this? Is that an easier way for you? And then maybe take their input as to whether it would be or not.
I thought they've already reached out and said that they'd prefer.
Have they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think one of the attitudes to go up there with is, how can we best help
you to approve it?
You know, what do we need to do to facilitate this? Because up until, I don't think we've had a dialogue staff to staff with the Coastal Commission. I think we really need to, you know, if it's extend that olive branch or whatever it is, to say, you know, we want to work together on getting this accomplished, because where we're at right now, really, it's not working.
Right.
Yeah.
What they're working on is again, the history is very long. I was involved in it from the very start. This was only supposed to be, it was a $95,000 grant, and it was only to take our general plan and our local coastal plan and put the two documents together, without any rewrite. It grew into much more than that, and the matrix changed from there. That was one of the ways that made it more complex, so maybe that's what we do, is regroup and go back to some of that earlier drafts even. And then the other thing was, which I just lost my train of thought on, was looking at it from our zoning code too, and talking to them about that and seeing what that might be a better document to look at first. If you realize our LCP, actually, although it's in two different documents, is not a bad worded document. There are some archaic spots, and there's some spots that need interpretations like we had over the couple of years. But it's really our zoning when you see where we want stuff to get done, where you brought forward the 2,500 square feet, the wireless communications, some of the overlays that are cumbersome. That's really
going to withdraw it if we can't resolve this. At least they can go there with that. But until we get there, I feel like it'd be premature now at this point having a date.
I agree. We've been waiting a long time for this face-to-face. We're finally going to get one. I don't want to change course just before we finally have that. Let's consult with them and find out what's the best way for us to go on this. I think your idea of the olive branch is a good idea. Let's give them a chance. If they don't give us the response we want, then we'll choose to go another way.
Well, what response is it that you would like?
Some action.
But the whole point is it's not going to happen, and that's what hasn't happened.
Well, I realize that because we really haven't had any conversations with them, and now in 2 short months we're going to have that opportunity. I think we should explore that before we go changing our methods.
And a change in administration that'll be representing us too. So I'd like to just – I mean, I can appreciate what you're asking, and I'm supportive of that, but I'd like to wait first to see if we can find some resolve.
But do you understand that the change in administration has nothing to do with the document? It's the document that's the problem.
We think.
Well,
we don't know.
And what I think I'm hearing is Ms. Winholtz is suggesting that we approach this from a flexible standpoint.
Yeah.
So there's that opportunity to go hear the feedback and take action that's appropriate. So I don't want to say we're not going to do this or we are right now, but for staff to realize that we're willing to go with whatever direction seems to be the most appropriate after that meeting.
So you would have them communicate a willingness to do it differently, whatever that might mean.
Yeah, our openness to whatever is going to be the most effective.
Take the guidance from them. If they'll get anything done, we'll do it. So, is that okay? So the direction would be that the group that goes up to talk with the Coastal Commission is to communicate our desire to get it done in the easiest way for them.
And that includes withdrawing it.
Yes. I mean, I certainly think that's probably the end game, but I think it's good to wait and see, because there might be that we might hear, well, your LCP's in order here, and it's been working its way up, and now it's 3, and if you withdraw it, it drops to 10. Maybe there's some other way of doing it so it doesn't drop if they're done with some of it. I don't know, but I think that's got a small chance. But would definitely communicate that council has said that they are interested in withdrawing it or doing anything that we can to facilitate the update of our LCP and our zoning ordinance, and tell them that, you know, we've got these amendments that are coming forward, and, you know, that's part of getting some of this through the pipeline.
Okay. So is that sufficient direction then, or do you need a motion? Okay, we've got enough direction. All right, now I've got a procedural question. We have one other item that was going to be informational only, and we continued that. Can we still do that tonight since it was already on the agenda? Okay. Well, let's go for that then. It's item B3. And it's a recommendation on staffing levels for the fiscal year 2010-11 budget. Andrea.
Thank you and good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council. At this point in time, the city of Morro Bay is experiencing a budgetary perfect storm resulting from a combination of factors, including a declining TOT, transient occupancy tax, flat sales tax expectations,
flat program revenues, a decline in planning and building and related fees, increased personnel costs, decreased transit fees, and decreased franchise fees. As you remember, just a few weeks ago, we went through a goal-setting session, and the council reiterated the importance of a sustainable budget. In other words, a budget where regular yearly expenditures meet or exceed, where regular yearly revenues meet or exceed regular yearly expenditures without the use of reserve funds. Last year, the city was successful in presenting and having adopted a balanced budget without the use of any reserves and without any layoffs, but regrettably this year it appears that that will not be the case. During the goal-setting process, those discussions led staff to prepare an estimated revenue and expenditure sheet for review with the Administrative Services Director and myself. After the initial review, the difference between revenues and expenditures was approximately $900,000. Over the course of the following weeks, over $400,000 of non-personnel-based expenditures were cut. However, after this review, it certainly became clear to staff, based on the declining revenues, the sluggish economy, and the delayed fiscal recovery, layoffs would have to be considered in order for staff to provide a balanced budget to the City Council. In consideration of layoffs, we consulted our layoff policy, which has been attached to your staff report, assured that the service level reductions will be repeatedly communicated to the City Council and the public, and there will not be continual requests to do more with less. I would emphasize that when the employee unions and organizations are formally notified of the potential layoffs, which will occur in the next week, they may request to meet and confer on the impact of the loss, and they may offer concessions back to the city in exchange for a reduction in the number of estimated positions to be laid off. This information will be available at the first budget workshop scheduled for May 19th of this year. With that said, in order to meet the goal of a sustainable budget without the use of any reserve funds, it's difficult to imagine a scenario where there are no layoffs this upcoming fiscal year. Following the first budget workshop, we will be able to more provide the City Council further impact issues such as office closures during the lunch hour or additional hours, scheduling changes, and staff availability overall. We know there'll be impacts. It's difficult to fully determine those impacts prior to knowing the final staffing numbers. In terms of layoffs, we've included the following in the proposed budget: elimination of the office assistant 4 position in Recreation and Parks, reduction to halftime the administrative technician position in the fire department, elimination of the crime prevention coordinator position in the police department, elimination of the building official position in the public services department, reduction of the permit technician position to 3/4 time in the public services department, elimination of the housing programs coordinator position and reclassification to an administrative technician in the public services department, and elimination of the accountant position in the administrative services department. It's also important to note that several departments also lost unallocated part-time positions during the budget cuts. While those positions are not counted in the overall full-time staffing levels of the city, these positions played or were to play a significant part in the functioning of the city. And those positions include the property and evidence clerk in the police department, the second reserve police officer that was currently unfilled and unhired, but we had gotten permission to hire that from the council a couple of months ago, as well as several interns in the public services department, both in the planning and the engineering areas. Due to the city layoff policy, we're presenting this information to you at this time, and we will be bringing this back to you during your first budget hearing. We've also included a proposed employee layoff schedule that is in compliance with the city's layoff policy. As you can see, there's a number of steps we need to go through in order to meet that those layoffs in time for the new fiscal year to begin. I think in conclusion, with the above indicated staffing level changes, the city will approach a balanced budget for presentation at the initial budget hearing on May 19th. The recommended budget the City Council will receive includes significant reductions to the general fund spending as part of a comprehensive balancing strategy to mitigate the impacts of both declining revenues and rising costs. However, even with those reductions, we believe the budget that staff will be recommending is balanced, fair, and in line with the overall priorities of our community. Working on these staffing level reductions and producing the proposed fiscal year 2010-2011 budget was the most difficult in recent history. Department heads, managers, and program-level staff in our organization are proud of the services they provide to the public, and it is especially painful to recommend reductions to programs in which they have invested significant portions of their professional careers and have public constituencies. Additionally, some of the most difficult decisions have a direct impact on the lives of work colleagues and, in many cases, their entire families. I am proud of the professionalism in which this organization, has dealt with many of these difficult decisions and the strong emphasis on maintaining services while trying to minimize employee layoffs. Many of these proposals will not be popular, but they represent our best collective recommendation on how to deal honestly and professionally with the economic situation with which we are faced. This is an informational report, and staff is not requesting any city action. This report does have ramifications that will be in your budget on May 19th. I've lost all my department heads at this point, with the exception of Rob Leivick, so if you have specific questions, I'm happy to bring those back to you. But that does conclude my report.
Okay. Anybody have questions?
That reserve police officer, it was less than half-time, right? It was part-time, that's less than half-time?
I think we looked at a 20-hour part-time non-allocated position. You're correct.
Any other questions? Okay. I'm just going to say again, the reason that we did have this as a public hearing, and we did open it previously so we don't have to do that again, was just to make sure that the people that are watching this meeting understand what we're faced with, a $500,000 budget deficit. Anyone? None?
I think the ones I was talking with Andrea about are already on the future agenda list, but I just want to remind you of the importance of them, and I don't want them to get buried down there. I'd just like to encourage us to address those two regarding risk management and accumulation fund policy.
I'll try to bring those back to you in perhaps at your May 10th meeting for consideration.
Okay, before we get to budgeting.
All right. Noah?
Yeah. My first is just an update for the council regarding the landmark tree discussion that the tree committee has been working on and the master tree list update. Right now we are scheduled to go with a landmark tree to the Planning Commission this first meeting in May. That's the third. Working with Mr. Leifick to get our landmark tree recommendation, which has already been reviewed and approved by the Public Works Advisory Board, into the Planning Commission's packet, and we will be presenting to them and get their feedback and input, and then if they approve, it will come to the council at the earliest possible date. With the master tree list update, the Public Works Advisory Board wanted us to refine that a little bit more, so we've been working on that, and we're tentatively scheduled to represent those adjustments to the Public Works Advisory Board on the 19th of May. So that would follow the same process, go then from the PWAB to the Planning Commission and then ultimately to the Council. So that's the update there. The other thing that the Tree Committee has been talking about is the concept of more of a promotional, educational, and awareness program or activity that is a practice of identifying a city tree, such as we have a city flower as the dahlia. And I suggest that we, as the Tree Committee, put together a council report about that concept to get consent from the council before we move forward with that campaign, which would be more of a fun activity for the community to discuss what our tree is and have that sort of a awareness opportunity. So I just wanted to see if that's something that it's not obviously a major priority, but at a future time that's convenient, I could put together, working with the Tree Committee, that report to get consent from the council that we go forward with that.
Okay, so you're going to put together the report for name the Morro Bay Tree Committee contest or whatever, right?
No, not name the Tree Committee, but actually select a tree.
I'm sorry, not a committee, yeah, a tree.
So that would that would be the concept. Just wanted to make sure that's okay.
Right. I think that sounds like fun. I'm okay with that.
That was the idea. Nothing major that says we have to plant that tree everywhere, but just something fun.
And you'll do the report. So
yes.
There's no staff time involved.
None.
Okay. So do we have agreement on that one?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Great. And then the last one is.
Excuse me. Per chapter 1208, the city tree list does not necessarily need to come back to council. Per our ordinance, it gets approved at the planning commission level, so it doesn't necessarily need to come back to council. So just wanted to point that out for your consideration.
But we could see it if we wanted to.
Yes.
I don't know what to say, whether leave it up to the council or the planning commission. We can go either way as the tree committee. We're
here to serve.
Well, you can
certainly give us all a copy, and if anybody's got a concern, we can let you know.
If that works for the council, yeah.
Okay, what's your other future agenda
item? Okay, we'll talk about that later. The other agenda item is an extension of our discussion at the last JPA meeting regarding wastewater treatment plant criteria and measurement of success. Mr. Wade, at the meeting, put it how the council and the JPA board define success of the project. He suggested that's something that we should work on. I talked with him again before the meeting, and he affirmed that he felt like that was a worthwhile practice. I think it's something that is appropriate for us as a council to talk about before it's brought back to the JPA, because I think there's a good chance that we would have some different measurements than Cayucas, and it's important for us internally to get that in order and come to a consensus before we bring it to the JPA. And I'm sure there will be similar criteria between the two of us, but some will be different. And, I felt like that conversation would be a good one for us to have.
Okay, and is that a staff report, or is that something that you would do the report and just we'd have the discussion around that?
I don't mind generating the report for that.
Okay. And, ask Dylan for his input on anything.
Oh, yeah, I'd give his input.
Is that agreeable?
So you're talking council, not JPA.
Council first.